Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
And be the man.
You gotta be the man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
Hey, this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki?
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to a post-elimination chamber episode of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the wonderful folks of the Wild Talk Radio Network. Our number, as always, if you wish to communicate with us during this program at any time from now till the end of the show, is 267-297-1397. If you are on the Skype network, feel free to add Sir Rockin', the god of internet radio, and he will pipe you in with us tonight. There is also now a new way to listen to Online World of Wrestling Radio or any program on the Wild Talk Radio Network if you have a mobile device of any kind, BlackBerry, Verizon, whichever service you use. You type in this into your browser, wtr.wirenode, all one word, no spaces, .mobi, and then you can take the Wild Talk Radio Network wherever you want to go with it. Tonight is, as you heard,
Sharon!
Yes, we're going to celebrate the music of Mr. Ozzy Osbourne, formerly of Black Sabbath, and recently some neat commercials just for during the Super Bowl with a What's a Bebop? My 8-year-old didn't like that too much, but America did when the little kid got his hair cut recently. Hooray! This is one of 3 weeks in a row where we are going to have WrestleMania memory guests that are going to blow your shorts off. We'll talk about the other two guests that'll be here on the 1st and the 8th, but tonight during the 10 o'clock hour, if you're a current fan of Ring of Honor, you know that this weekend is their 9th anniversary event. I can't believe Ring of Honor has been around 9 years. So you go to gofightlive.tv and you can, check out your stuff for how to log on for that event, where the main event is the current ROH World Champion, the Messiah of the Backbreaker, Roderick Strong, taking on a former guest of ours. Also, Roderick was a guest during 2010, the Notorious 187 Homicide. We will be speaking with the producer of that event and a former WWE creative member, and currently has a real interesting podcast site called I Want Wrestling. David Lagana will join us. We will get into everything involving TNA wrestling as it gets weirder and weirder every week. And we'll talk about this Thursday's taping that's going to be going on in Fayetteville. And we will break down all the fun that was the Elimination Chamber and the returns of people again last night to Monday Night Raw. It seems like it's they had the homecoming episode a few years ago. Now it seems like everyone and their cousins coming back to Monday Night Raw. I keep waiting, looking over my shoulder, going, who's next? I mean, seriously, who's next?
So, my boyfriend's back and you're gonna be in trouble. Hey,
oh,
la,
yeah.
Hey, la, my boyfriend's back.
Oh, yeah. We will address the return of the man from his office in Stamford, Connecticut, and what most likely is his WrestleMania opponent, the Dead Man. Joining us, as always, from WrestleTalk Radio, from Bashing the Books, from Tap Out to Knockouts, and I believe they'll be busy this Saturday with the UFC event, and we'll address that later on. They're also partnered with Taku Talk Live, Spug and Macer here. We will be possibly graced with the presence of Sarah and Ari Daigan from In This Very Ring. That's if their producers, namely their children, give them a couple minutes to come on and check us out. So thanks to everybody for logging in tonight on the chat room with us, and we'll take questions from you for Mr. Logano when he's here at 10 o'clock.
Alan,
Mace wanted to, yes?
I have a question for you.
The answer is always 42, Spug.
No, the answer is 43.
It's 43? Oh.
Yes. No. You're a New York kid, right?
Born, raised, and never lost my accent.
Okay. How long have you been running this podcast with your music themes?
Maybe. I don't know.
And
I think I'll start doing them. Go ahead.
Not once have you had a Ramones night? What the hell's
it's
the
coming.
Matter with you?
No, there's a specific guest I want to have when I have Ramones night. There's certain guests that are plugged in my head that are getting certain artists. Tammy Sitch was supposed to have Billy Joel, but unfortunately she doesn't like to return emails. So, oh well, thanks for coming, Tammy. You can see her this weekend here. There's a lot of bands that I got to cover in this thing, man. There's a lot of stuff. Let's jump into the real fun that was the Elimination Chamber. Well, if you listen to Wrestle Talk Radio Sunday night, and I thank them again for letting me be a part of that event, it was a mixed bag. And I got hit in the chops by everybody for it. So let's run the card real quick for fans that did not attend our chat or listen to the show, the post show on Wrestle Talk Radio. Alberto Del Rio, the number one contender for whatever reason, took on Intercontinental Champion Kofi Kingston in a non-title match, and Del Rio won. The SmackDown Chamber, the world champion Edge, survived the Big Show, who was a surprise return, instead of to Dolph Ziggler, who is possibly attending independent shows, depending if you check his Twitter. I believe it's Heel Ziggler. He also defeated Drew McIntyre, Kane, Rey Mysterio, and Wade Barrett. We had a return of Trish Stratus, who is going to be a trainer on Tough Enough 5 along with Booker T and Hugh Morris, the former Bill DeMott,
will be involved
in that.
He's going to be a trainer?
Yep, he's coming back.
I always liked him. For some reason, I always liked him.
Yeah, he will be back. He was a part of Tough Enough 3, and he was an interesting cat and was a part of their Deep South debacle, unfortunately, but FCW rose from those ashes. If you watched Monday Night Raw, you know that Justin Gabriel and Heath Slater won the WWE Tag Team titles from Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov, and we'll address all the fun that ensued on Monday Night Raw with those tag belts in a minute. We had what many are calling a Botchamania moment in Trish Stratus and a pair of boots, not exactly being ready to be involved in a program with Lay Cool, and if fans are wondering what the heck was up with Michelle McCool's boots, that was an air cast, I believe, that she was wearing on one of her legs. I believe she is currently working through a broken bone in her foot or somewhere along those lines. So we wish her a speedy recovery. I know a certain McTaker does too. We did have what many of us were hoping on March 1st, we were hoping to interview the WWE champion, Jerry the King Lawler, but damn, The Miz, somewhat clean. We did have a little bit of A-Rod involved in there. And, of course, the man, the myth, the thugonomic leader, John Cena, took out, defeated Randy Orton, CM Punk, John Morrison, R-Truth, and King Sheamus compete for the WWE or world title at WrestleMania.
That's your sticking point, isn't it? That's the one thing you hated out of that pay-per-view was the fact that Cena won.
We had this, and for fans that listened in to Wrestle Talk Radio Sunday night, you should listen each and every week when I'm not there, because these guys are top-notch and talk about the most off-the-wall stuff that you never imagine, which is great. And Spug and I had a heated debate, which was a friendly one, unlike other events where I've had debates with people and it got ugly, where he said, I totally get where Spug was coming from, but go ahead and present your view on this, and we'll let Mace chime in a minute, too. Defend your decision as to going to WrestleMania with The Miz taking on Marky Mark minus the Funky Bunch.
Well, I interrupt him a lot, so I will let Mace interrupt me, and I want to hear what he has to say first, so.
Okay, we defer to Mace. If he can step away from World of Warcraft.
I don't play World of Warcraft during the show, so I at least keep my word, unlike others.
Oh, if we're going to go there, buddy, all right. Fuck you, then.
Whoa, way now.
What's the putty mouth? This is PG show. It's like Raw. You are not The Rock, goddammit.
Oh, we'll bring him up, too, because the Thugonomics came way back into play on Monday Night Raw. But
that was great, by the way.
Yeah. Mace has the floor. Are you fine with The Miz versus John Cena going into WrestleMania 27?
I believe I was predicting this from the start. You know, as I'm sure Spug will say in a few minutes, you know, everybody's going for Morrison. Morrison isn't somebody that they're going to risk putting a WrestleMania main event on. Cena, proven draw, sells tickets, puts butts in seats. That's what the wrestling business is all about. Mm-hmm. So to have him in the main event with The Miz, that's logical from a sales point of view.
Okay.
You guys were the ones arguing about this. I just sat back and I'm like, yeah, well, surprisingly enough, Spug and I share the same opinions, even if we do argue between ourselves from time to time.
Exactly. So go right ahead, Spug, and finish. You just in a condensed form, is that basically Mace's spouting your opinion that having Cena there guarantees a certain number of buys as opposed to a John Morrison or any of the other people that were in this event?
Aside from Randy Orton being there, yes. Because Randy Orton, I think, would have still garnered a lot more buys than John Morrison. My whole point was and is that this is your event to pull in the fringe fans. It's the same thing like with baseball, man. When baseball, you know, when the World Series comes on, those television networks want the Yankees, they want the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Phillies to an extent. You know, they want those major market teams in there to pull in the fringe fans. It's the same thing with wrestling. When you start putting your program together and putting your card together for your biggest event of the year, John Morrison may be ready to hold the world strap and be ready for a main event run, but he's got to prove it on ancillary pay-per-views before you give him a spot on the biggest card of the year.
Well, couldn't you have done that at Royal Rumble? Because that's what a lot of us thought when he had that match to open 2011 where him and Miz brawled all over the place. Everyone was like, all right, cool. This is going to lead to Royal Rumble. And like they did with Dolph Ziggler going against Edge, it was a test balloon to see how Ziggler would do. I mean, he held his own in the cage, but it's the cage, obviously. The cage is the main attraction. Your child and mine could look great in the cage.
Well, Ziggler didn't do too bad at Rumble. He really didn't. He still needs a little bit more polishing. Thing with Morrison is absolutely ready. I'll give you that. He's 100% ready to be there. The thing though with the Rumble is that it's different than any other pay-per-view because that is where you start to really put your WrestleMania feuds together.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, well, maybe fortunately, over the past few years, No Way Out has sort of cropped up in February or the Elimination Chamber, whatever you want to call it, And now that's really your tipping point for Mania feuds, because it's 6 weeks until Mania. As before, you know, it was, you had the Royal Rumble at the end of January. A couple of times it was in the beginning of February, you know, like the first weekend. And then from there, you went all the way to Mania without a pay-per-view. It was all, you know, Raws and house shows that they set everything up at. You could have put Miz in the main event at the Rumble as far as, you know, title contender.
But going Morrison, up against, you mean?
Yeah, you could have put Morrison there. I don't see it. I don't see the big issue with it now that No Way Out or Elimination Chamber, whatever you want to call it, is there in February. But I think that if you really want to test the buy potential of a Miz Morrison feud and blow off at a pay per view, you need to do it somewhere in the middle of the year where it's pretty much dead. You know, post WrestleMania, pre SummerSlam. Or I would even say you could do it at the December event, whatever the December event is. I can't remember the name of it now.
It used to be Vengeance. I can't remember what they call it now.
I thought it was Armageddon.
Armageddon. I'm sorry. The December event now for WWE is TLC, which we had the stick figures at a few weeks ago. Yeah, so if Miz comes out of Mania, and I know we're jumping way, 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 way ahead, here's the list of other pay-per-views between Mania and you get to SummerSlam. You've got Extreme Rules, it's going to be here in Tampa, May 1st. You've got Over the Limit, May 22nd, once again doing this, two pay-per-views really close together set up. That's tentatively in Seattle. Fatal 4-Way is Verizon Center, Washington, June 19th. Money in the Bank, June 17, 2011, and then SummerSlam, once again, is in Los Angeles at August 14th. And you guys, including Omega, who is another great correspondent on this network, who's podcast everywhere in the world, Tim also mentioned it, too, that if you're going to go Morrison, let him do whatever at Mania, and build and build, and then have him go over and maybe the Raw version of the Money in the Bank, and then let him go from there. But you could have done that already. What do you think is holding him back to Spuggin and the Mace? Is it creative not trusting in him because of the parkour thing? He could get injured and injured really bad. I mean, look at what happened to Punk in the cage. His entire leg of his thigh was mashed up, and whether it was a work or a shoot, Morrison's knees took a beating in that cage. Sorry, chamber. I keep calling it a cage, but it's a chamber.
I mean, it's a cage, but the chamber is different than any other cage. It's different than the Hell in a Cell. It's different than a traditional steel cage. The chamber is designed. I don't care what, and the promotions for it are correct. The cage is designed to injure people.
Oh, sure. Look at the original going back to 2002. Eric Bischoff walked in there with a mat, with a thing, and he's beating the crap out of it. And RVD took Triple H to the woodshed, Jim Ross would say, and you're going, ow.
Yeah, I mean, that...
The first five minutes of that thing.
That cage is designed to injure people. So, the parkour thing that Morrison does can only serve to help him in the long run, because it is another tool he can utilize when in a match, you know, to disguise botches or slip ups. I mean, think about it. He's on the top rope getting a jump, right? And he slips. Say he goes, we'll put him in the situation of Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 19, right?
Ooh, do we have to? That's still a nightmare scenario.
Right, but
I know where you're going. Go ahead.
We'll put him in that situation, right? The ring ropes are slippery, the tape's starting to come up, and his boot's wet from the condensation. And he goes to jump and slips. That parkour training of his, and how quickly he can think, he can turn something out of nothing. So, instead of Brock, you know, you know, instead of him landing on his neck, you know, like Brock Lesnar did, and screwing up a shooting star press, perhaps we're, you know, talking about one of the greatest WrestleMania moments ever. You know, that he did something with that, and it came out of a botch. I think that parkour thing only serves to help him in the long run. I really think what's holding him back is that he is not trusted completely to draw yet. And that is the only thing holding him back, in my opinion.
Okay, well, to Mace, then, if Spug's right that it's a trust thing in the draw, is it the character that John Morrison is portraying now? Because he's had this character going at least to 2006, maybe 2007, after Eminem split and Molina went off on her own. Is it time for a John Morrison revamping the character, or is it something else that's stopping him? Is it like Spoke said, is it creative sitting there going, you know, he's really great, he's good on the mic, the ladies love him, he's got the moves, but something's missing. I mean, they're pushing Del Rio through the roof after 6 months, and as we've addressed on the show, certain members of our roster love or hate Mr. Del Rio, but I mean, what is it? Is it he's not eating enough Fruity Pebbles as we saw on the pay-per-view, or what is it? What in your view is holding John Morrison back? Is it the glasses, the hair, the fan, the fur coat, all of the above?
Don't knock the coat.
Hey, I wish we could, and I'm always wondering, that looks like something the Ultimate Warrior would have worn back in the day, going out and killing polar bears or something, the promo, I'm taking on the woolly mammoth.
Good lord. What medication are you on this week, Alan? Seriously, I mean, you're going all over the place, man.
I'm off the cold meds right now, thank God.
But to be honest, the thing that's probably holding Morrison back the most is creative themselves. You know, here it is, a guy with all the talent and all the skill in the world, and creative sitting there going, what do we do with him? Because every time they put forward something, it seems that when it gets to the filters, it's like, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, take our guest at the 10 p.m. hour. He's done his blogs over at his website, and he's coming up with great ideas and showing how things flow and everything, and believe me, I'm going to love picking his mind about that at the top of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it seems that somewhere between the creative team and actually getting it out there onto TV, there's some sort of roadblock in the middle, probably could be a McMahon filter for all I know, that seems to be going, nah, not going to do it.
But he's marketable. The people, you buy those glasses at the shows, and obviously TNA marked off of it with the Elijah Burke, Pope DeAngelo De Niro deal, so he's got something that, it's the old Bret Hart thing. You go out to the ring, Morrison does his thing, the fan goes off, he picks a kid or a girl or whatever, he puts the glasses on, you can sell this guy. So, okay, well let's think about it in this light before we get into Monday Night Raw. Since he's not gonna wrestle The Miz, who on the roster in the 6 weeks you have between now and Mania, Mace, and then we'll go to Spug as well, who do you put Morrison with? Because there probably will not be a Money in the Bank, since, as mentioned, there is a specific Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Where does Morrison go between now and April 3rd?
See, if it was me, like, and we're taking Money in the Bank out of WrestleMania, like, out of the equation, seeing as its own pay-per-view, like, the fanboy in me wants to see Morrison versus Daniel Bryan.
Ooh,
those kids could put on a real creative match. You put it somewhere in either the open or the mid-card, and it'll get the crowd hot as hell. Don't know how you get them there, but hell, I'd find a way.
All right, well, you got to obviously get Ted DiBiase Jr. out of the picture, or you could create a triple threat situation, maybe. DiBiase, Morrison, Daniel Bryan over the U.S. belt.
Damn you both!
We're stealing Spug's thunder.
Oh! The moment Mace said Daniel Bryan, I went, son of a bitch! And then you said put him in a three-way. I'm like, really? God!
Well, maybe Mick Taggart. Put some girls in there, too. You got Gail Kim and the Bellas and Maurice all.
No! Leave the women out! Put those three in a three-way!
you can do lots with Morrison. I honestly think that if you put some other sort of secondary title on him, you know, if you put like the US or the Intercontinental title on him and let him run with it for a while, put him in some sort of program. Who is the Intercontinental title, the Intercontinental champion right now?
It's Kofi.
Is it Kofi? Are they still talking about unifying the belts?
I haven't heard anything about it. I don't know if Sir Rockin can type in real fast. You haven't heard it, right? Sir Rockin being the god of internet radio says no, that's not something that's coming up.
If for some reason that somebody from WWE is listening to this, here's an idea for you for WrestleMania that really doesn't need a whole lot of thought process behind it. You slip it on the card and you let the kids have fun. Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston, Ted DiBiase Jr., and John Morrison in a fatal four-way unifying of the Intercontinental and U.S. belts. Let the kids go have fun.
That's definitely an interesting one. I'm indifferent to it, because as I said, I was hoping for Morrison Miz, and now I know I need to get past it. So I will get past it. I'll be a happy camper, and I'll move on from it. I wouldn't mind seeing that type of match of Daniel Bryan mixed in, put a belt on somebody. I mean, as I said, without Money in the Bank, Kofi's looking around going, whoa, I mean, I'm actually going to get to defend the Intercontinental title on this pay-per-view. I mean, wow, this is pretty cool. And for once, maybe the tag titles will get defended, but we'll broach into WrestleMania and everything, because we have 6 weeks till we get there. And believe me, there's plenty of stuff to go along with that. Before we go to break, we'll tease the idea to this. The second member of the WWE Hall of Fame was announced last night on Monday Night Raw, and it is the resident of Glens Falls, New York, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. To either one of you gentlemen, I guess we'll go to Spug first. Good choice, bad choice, or it's the Hall of Fame, who cares?
I care about the Hall of Fame. I don't necessarily know that it was a good choice, but it's not a bad choice. I think there were others that probably would have been a better decision to go into the hall. I'm not entirely convinced that Hacksaw, you know, should be going in over guys that we continually talk about it, like, you know, Ravishing Rick Rude, Randy Savage, you know, Sting, people like that, Kevin Nash. You know, I'm not sure that Duggan deserves to get in over them.
This is the same company base that has Pete Rose, Bob Uecker, Coco Beware in the Hall of Fame.
You can't use Pete Rose and Bob Uecker in that.
Coco Beware is in the Hall of Fame. He was a very good mid-card performer in the 80s and early 90s, helping Owen Hart in his tag team of High Energy. Is he worthy of it? I mean, we could probably go another hour just on who's worthy and not worthy of the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, to Mace, fine with Duggan? Nah. I could come up with 10 other people better.
I've been a Duggan fan for quite a while, so I'm happy to see him get in. The dude's been a workhorse for multiple companies over the years, so it's good to see him actually getting some recognition. Let's just hope nothing bad happens to him, and it did many years ago when he had to sell his U.S. title belt and he's King of the Ring gear.
Yeah, and believe it or not, unless I read that wrong on the screen during Monday Night Raw, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, will be inducting Hacksaw Jim Duggan into the Hall of Fame. We're going to take our first time out. When we come back, we will be addressing all the fun that was Monday Night Raw. So everybody get out your Thugonomics dictionary, and we'll address all the fun that happened on the USA Network last night. You're listening to Online World of Wrestling Radio here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Barry. Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Woogerman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
And now, a message to our competitors.
Thanks
for tuning us in.
In case you missed it, this is what happens when WTR roasts Tim Stein.
Tim Stein is also not Jewish. It's horrible to assume the man is Jewish just because his name is Stein. You know, maybe that isn't even his real name. I mean, it's probably Goldstein or Steinberg. You don't know. He'd tell you himself if he were here tonight. I'm told he's taking the day off for some holiday of his. I don't remember what it's called, but he pronounced it with a
Tim really does work hard at making the WTR network what it is. Seriously, I'm not joking. Somebody pay this guy. He's like 65 years old. He needs retirement. He gets retirement, we get less Tim Stein. It's win-win, gang. Come on.
Happy birthday. You suck. You suck. You suck so bad. That's not true. You don't actually suck. You more or less blow. You've got a perfect face for gay porn, or at least a perfect mouth. That's what JJ tells me.
He's also not a pervert. The last couple of years, he had a wonderful and healthy relationship. He stayed with her every night. Constant, wild sex. You know, it's sad when they had to break up because he couldn't find the puncture repair kit. Don't get me wrong, they tried to patch things up, but Tim just couldn't bear the sight of her anymore. Not with a duct tape holding her neck closed.
Tune in to all the great programming on the Wild Talk Radio Network, as you never know what will happen next.
There are plenty of wrestling radio shows that consider themselves to be award-winning, yet they are full of flaws. While WrestleTalk Radio continues to bring you the best wrestling talk on the internet today, with no production flaws. Tune in Sunday nights for WrestleTalk Radio, the best value in wrestling radio. We're just saying.
Hey, you, go! Wild Talk! Wild Talk! You want Wild Talk? This is George the Animal Steel. Hey! You go! Bye-bye.
Welcome back to My Will of Wrestling Radio on the Wild Talk Radio Network. This is fun. I dig the Ozzy. And the funny part is, you know, there's a whole generation of people that all they know him for is mumbling and stumbling around that mansion that he had with Sharon and the two children, and I lost count on how many dogs were on that show.
Have you ever seen Ozzy live?
I have not. I missed him this weekend. He was here at the St. Pete Times Forum with Slash. I've seen him on many a video package live, but I have not physically seen him live. I'm guessing you have.
Twice. I got to see him at Ozfest. I tell you what, it's true. He does piss himself mid-show. When he douses himself in water, you know that he has just pissed himself. And he does have a monitor in front of him, a teleprompter by one of the monitors on the stage. But for his age and the drugs that he has done, I'm not kidding when I say that he is probably one of the best live performers I've ever seen.
And that's saying a lot, because the guy, he's been around since at least, I think Sabbath's been around since at least the early 70s.
68.
Yeah, because he always says in interviews, you know, everybody talks about, what influenced you, and he'll sit up and straight say to you, the Beatles did it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like Billy Joel, he's like a lot of artists, the Beatles did it for him, and so definitely if you can find him, he's on tour with Slash, the former guitar from Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver. Thanks to Mace, we have some interesting audio that we're going to play. If you missed Monday Night Raw last night, I don't know what excuse you had unless you were out celebrating President's Day a little too hard. The show was opened by our friend and lover, John Cena, Marky Mark of the Funky Bunch, came out and actually addressed what Dwayne The Rock Johnson said on last week's edition of Monday Night Raw. And thanks to permission from YouTube and World Wrestling Entertainment, here is the Thugonomics of John Cena.
Let me get my chain out for a second. Finally, The Rock came back and everyone was getting with it. Till he said I was talking trash, but he would never be specific. It's because I wasn't talking trash, Rock. I was talking truth. You left us hanging high and dry to play a fairy with a tooth? And then you walk into this ring and tell these people that I'm lame, man? He wore lipstick and Get Shorty and rocked a skirt for the game plan. This fruity pebble that you dealing with? I'm not your average jabroni. I'm like a big purple pinwheel, Rock, so go ahead and blow me. And you're electrifying, yes! But hang with me, that's just absurd. See, now you gotta tell your family you just got schooled by Barney's turd. Oh, no, no, no. Wait. That's your material. You can have your joke back. Just don't go racing a witch mountain, Rock, because your mountain is broke back. Oh, no. Wait. The Rock's new movie? Well, it's nothing like Walking Tall. He spends the movie in a bowling alley polishing my balls. The people's champ. He's never with the people. Rock, your words are see-through. You imitate me every time you leave. For 7 years, we couldn't see you. And is it Rock or is it Dwayne? Pick a side. Come on, son. If I was you, I'd stick with Rock, because Dwayne ain't got a Johnson. And you'll see me at WrestleMania? Well, then I'll make sure not to miss it. But you ain't gonna whip my candy ass, dude. I'll make sure you kiss it. You're the WrestleMania host, Rock. That's your role. Know it. You tell these people that you love them. I'm here every week to show it. That's called a first round knockout. And now you know that I'm not playing. Run your mouth all you want, dude. It doesn't matter what you're saying.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, there is indeed...
Yeah, that was brought to you by the folks at Fruity Pebbles, who possibly will be a sponsor of All the World of Wrestling Radio. Jersey Girl in our chat room said she misses that John Cena. It's amazing. Do you miss that John Cena? The crazy thugonomic guy who would tear everybody down in the rap. Do you think that could be teasing the idea of going back to that? Or are we fine with the current John Cena we see?
Well, I'm sure a lot of fans would be wanting to make sure that they get the John Cena of old, because they're currently very, very sick of the one that we're seeing. Well, have been seeing over the last few months, because that's Super Cena. We want the master of thugonomics. At least that was entertaining. Seriously, and man, I actually miss the thugonomics theme music.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting, Spug, to see that whole setup, because going, okay, he's going to talk about Dwayne. Are you going to start whipping out box office receipts here? And then all of a sudden, he breaks out the thugonomics. And I'm going, wow, pretty far out. And the kids still got it, as they say. And he doesn't got it. He's muted.
I'm here. Mm. The only thing that would have been better is that if at the end of that, all you heard was the so you think you're untouchable, and then the old school,
oh, yeah.
The old
Batman song.
Mm-hmm. The old school violin. Yeah, you know the old John Cena entrance music. That would have been great. And I really, when I saw that, I marked out so hard. I'm not gonna lie. I thought it was fantastic. The one thing that I'll take from that is that John Cena, when he is absolutely right when he says, we've heard for 7 years about how you care about these people. And, you know, he says, I'm out here to show it. I will give him that. John Cena has never once, not tried to show the fans how much he cares about them or appreciates them.
Well,
so
it's two different personalities. I don't know, maybe... You know, Dwayne saw the money and said, oh, I have a wife, children, this is my passion. Who knows? Speaking of people with passions, the Chaperone is in the theaters now, so what better way to reintroduce Triple H to Monday Night Raw than have him interrupt the return of the dead man? As we found out, to the chagrin of a lot of us, the 2/21/11 was the return of the Undertaker. Yay! And as
we
soon as he
that
got
weeks
the
ago.
Ring, I wanted Sting, man! I wanted him! But hey, I've learned I can't get what I want as people get. Or sometimes, be careful which wish works just might get it. I mean, I watched this on DVR, and I was doing some other stuff around the house, so watched it and avoided every social network and clicked on. I'm going, all right, 2/21/11, here we go, and crap, here comes Taker. And I'll admit my jaw at the floor when all of a sudden it was Triple H coming out. I'm going, all right, Thunder Stealer. And then for the next 2 minutes, not a single word was said. Other than a lot of head turning, looking at a WrestleMania sign, nodding, more nodding, walking away, coming back. So it looks like, kids, we're going to get once again, from 10 years ago, at WrestleMania X7,
that
we're going to get...
crap.
Yeah. Because you just have one big ref bump and the next thing you know, you're brawling all through the Reliant Astrodome.
Right.
So, I mean, 10 years later, 10 years wiser, 10 years through all injuries that they've suffered, is this a show-stealer match? And do you turn this into what we guessed at? A Triple H puts his career up because, are you retired, Shawn Michaels? Let's see you do it to me, Cupcake. Or is this just a straight-up match, Spug?
Let Mace go, and then I'll go.
All right, well, Mace is putting up pictures and stuff, too.
I just had the image of Triple H calling The Undertaker Cupcake. I don't know, it just seems very out of place for him.
Of all the people to do it, he could.
True! And it would be the most hilarious thing I've ever seen in my life. But before I sort of get the thoughts on the upcoming match idea, congratulations, WWE production. You guys were so great keeping that Undertaker sign hidden through the first part of the show. Seeing as I spotted it at least several times. Including Alberto Del Rio. He points at it. I'm not really overly enthusiastic about seeing this match. And to be honest, I've got a feeling, like a lot of people have, that this was a knee-jerk reaction. That they originally wanted Sting, and then at the last minute they couldn't get Sting, so they hit the panic button, and Triple H turned around and goes, well, I'll do it. Mind you, that being said, those guys just coming down, doing entrances, and not a word is spoken, and they're just looking at each other. My God, it's like they're trying to instill emotion into this and get people interested. This is foreign concepts in WWE today.
Yeah, it is amazing. And we'll possibly address this with Dave Lagana when he's on in a few minutes, but it's weird to see, like I said, we're 10 years later, so you're seeing The Rock back from his match at that Mania where he lost. I believe, was that the one where Austin turned heel and got
yes.
the chair shot and all that fun with the beer? Okay. So you had him, you have Triple H back, you have Taker back, you have Shawn Michaels, who was contemplating a comeback at the end of 01, didn't quite get there until SummerSlam of 02. Is this a one-time thing like we've said, Spud? I mean, is your man crush back just to go to Mania? Or is he testing the waters and going, all right, let's see how I do at Mania, and then maybe I'll stick around? I don't know.
I think he's going to go the Undertaker route and work a limited schedule. I mean, the dude has 3 kids now. I mean, he's got 3 kids. He has more money than he could ever dream of and is the heir apparent to a multi-billion-dollar corporation. Are you really going to want to put your body through the rigors of professional wrestling 365 days a year if you have all of that laying in front of you?
I don't know. Let's ask Ric Flair.
You know what
Since
I mean?
Since he is a role model to Triple H.
I think he's a role model within the business. I don't think he's a role model as far as, you know, but that's a different story. And I don't think it's going to be Triple H that retires after Mania. There
you
will
think
be a,
possibly.
I think the Undertaker's done.
Wow. You heard it here first, breaking news. Spug believes that Taker goes down at Mania.
No. He's not losing.
Okay.
He's not losing. I think they're going to let Undertaker go out 20-0 and be done.
Wow.
Because
I'd agree with that.
I don't think that Undertaker... Look, the dude is... fantastic at what he does for his size and his age, but the glory days of his career are far behind him. He is no longer the, I don't want to say talent that he once was, because he definitely is, but he doesn't have the recuperative abilities of a younger man's body. And with how many hip replacements, knee surgeries, you know, everything that he's gone through, if you've ever seen him walk outside of the wrestling ring, there is a reason why Undertaker is slow and deliberate in getting to the ring, and he doesn't run unless he's being caught on fire by a misinformed pyro guy.
He walks
like an old man. He moves like an old man. He needs a walker in front of him. I mean, I've seen him walk. He is hurting. And I think, quite honestly, in my personal opinion, that this WrestleMania, he's going to go out on top of Triple H. Triple H will put him over because that is essentially Triple H's role now in the companies, to put the people over that need to be put over. And it's kind of hard. It's kind of weird to say that Undertaker needs to be put over. But I think that, you know, we've always heard the saying that all legends go out on their back. You know, there are exceptions to that rule. And with Undertaker at Mania, I think that is one of those exceptions, is that you can let him go out on top with that impressive kind of booking behind him of never having him lost at WrestleMania. You know, let him retire and go off into the winds and do whatever it is he wants to do, because his body just cannot take this profession anymore.
Mm. Also on this Monday Night Raw, you saw CM Punk defeat John Morrison, which also set up Randall Orton being brought out. The Bella Twins defeated Eve Torres and Gail Kim. Hooray! We had the Raw GM set up a tag match for later on in the night. Mark Henry defeated King Sheamus on this event. Michael Cole interviewed Jerry Lawler, who we'll be talking to next week at around this time. So tune in at 10 Eastern for Jerry Lawler next week. We had Justin Gabriel, Heath Slater drop the tag team titles to John Morrison and The Miz. John Cena and The Miz. Only to see them dropped right back. Before we go into my question, Mace, you wanted to pose something to us and the audience.
Yeah. There's just something that clicked in my head during the Taker Triple H segment on Raw last night. Now, people give TNA a lot of flack about bringing in the old guys and having them in the spotlight almost straight away. In the past 2 months, we've seen 5 older characters, older wrestlers returning, 3 of which have walked straight into a spotlight, and yet most wrestling fans have turned around and praised the living crap out of it. If TNA had done the exact same thing with this 22111 deal, and did it between, say, Sting and Hogan, fans would have crapped all over it. I'm sorry, but at this point, I'm wondering how many wrestling fans are pure hypocrites.
Is it the respect factor in the age thing, maybe, because of Hogan being as old as he is? Taker, according to Sorokin and the bios on the Level of Wrestling show, Mark Calloway, The Undertaker, at age 45. So is it maybe just a perception of the audience, Mace, that they perceive Hogan a certain light as opposed to Taker because he's that revered and known by the internet community? He's revered in the locker room because he's been there the longer than anyone except for like Howard Finkel and Steve Lombardi?
Personally, I just think it's people just going, we hate TNA because we hate TNA. WWE good, TNA bad, because that's how the perception of the two companies has been. You know,
I will disagree with you to a point, okay? And yeah. And I understand where you're coming from. I completely understand where you're coming from. But I will disagree with you to a point. Because the way that WWE has done the booking with this is that with The Rock returning, he's not, he didn't come back in and immediately take a prominent role within the company as a top echelon guy pushing aside younger talent who has worked their ass off to get where they are. Okay? Undertaker and Triple H. That is a match that is taking place, the biggest pay-per-view of the year, and was probably, I will agree, to a certain extent, a knee-jerk and, reaction to not
and
have
10 years
stay.
After their first one, too, by the way.
And 10 years after the first meeting. Those two haven't, I don't think those two have wrestled against each other in 10 years. Not in a major program, anyway. So, you have this, though it's not like those two have been are being thrust. Those three individuals are being automatically thrust into prominent storylines involving top echelon guys in the company. They're all three kind of doing their own thing on the fringe, and it's fine. The thing that TNA does that annoys me is that when they bring the old guys in, like Sting, Hogan, Nash, whatever, they are immediately thrust into the prominent storyline in a prominent role, pushing aside top guys in that company who have worked to get to where they are. And that's what annoys me about that style of what how TNA books that when they bring in the older talent.
Yeah,
not that they necessarily do that, but not that they bring the old talent in, but how they book it when they do it.
I can agree with you there, but at the same time, we go back just quickly. I know we're running low on time, Alan, so I'll make this.
You're
as
fine.
Quick as possible.
You're fine. We're all good.
You're talking about The Rock doing sort of an extra thing himself. If you take a look at Raw this week, you had Cena and The Miz basically not bothering looking at each other, but they're looking at The Rock. So, I don't know. This is early on, so we'll see how things go over time.
Oh, yeah, we've got 6 weeks between now and WrestleMania. Coming up after the break, we will be joined by the owner of IWantWrestling.com. He is also a producer with Ring of Honor, and we'll discuss their upcoming 9th anniversary iPay-per-view. I can't believe 9 years of Ring of Honor. We'll talk everything WWE and some Hollywood stuff with David Logano on the other side of the break on World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back.
Line after line, it was written in your eyes. I guess it's no surprise I'm happy dying.
This is Mace, the overworked co-host of WrestleTalk Radio, OWW Radio, Otaku Talk Live, the offside producer, Cindy's cleaning boy, building janitor, advertising guru, Spug's bong holder, drink runner, Omega's transformer record keeper, and bashing the books, all here on WildTalkRadio.com. If you decide to listen to a show that features a bit of the old-fashioned ultra-violence, people getting their heads kicked in, bones broken, and bloody crazy fights, then come on over and listen to Tap Outs to Knockouts live in the archive section of WildTalkRadio.com.
Mace, it's not all about the bloody stuff and the ultra-violence. Hey, this is Spud from Tap Outs to Knockouts. And if you want to hear the news, results, and technical side of MMA, then check us out on WildTalkRadio.com in the archive section. And oh yeah, we do have the bloody stuff.
And now I know.
And knowing is half the battle. Hey! What are you guys doing in here? Get back to sweeping.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with WrestleTalk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join WrestleTalk Radio every Sunday night, live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live,
Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show. So tune in. Listen. I demand it.
All right, this is the king of old school, Mr. Wrestling 3, a true legend in professional wrestling, Steve Corino. And if all those nicknames didn't really matter to you, it doesn't matter to many other people, because you're listening to the online World of Wrestling Radio with Alan Wojcicki.
Welcome back to our second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the folks at the Wild Talk Radio Network. We're also sponsored by Click Wrestle, is the official on-demand site of Online World of Wrestling, Online World of Wrestling Radio. You can find the greats of yesterday and today there. We're also sponsored by the official forum of Online World of Wrestling. It is OWW Genesis, the gold standard in the world of professional wrestling. As always, our contact info is 267-297-1397 if you wish to call in. You can also Skype and add Sir Rockin to your thing, and he will bring your call to us, because we are going to be addressing another week of WrestleMania memories, and we're also going to be speaking about, amazingly, I said, I can't believe this, when somebody nudged me at a show this week, and I said, you know, Ring of Honor's been around for 9 years, I was going, really? Seems like they just started. He has a rather unique podcast set up on his own personal site, which is iwantwrestling.com. He's also on Twitter at Lagana, and usually you'll see a tag with hash marks, I think it's called, and I Want Wrestling. We welcome David Lagana to our program. Thank you for taking time out of your day. I know earlier today you had Court Bauer, and we'll address other guests that have been on your show there. So thanks for taking time out of your day for us.
No problem. I'm waving, but because it's radio, you can't see me. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. I got an email from my friend Melissa, and she is a graduate of the University of South Florida, and her sorority friends emailed me as soon as they told me I was having you on, and they said, okay, we're hijacking your show with an email because we want to know, truth or rumor, did David Lagana, was he part of the writer's room on season one of Friends?
Not season one, season six.
Okay. Oh, so, you're, so, okay, so take us through six. That experience, because, you know, you're thrust into, and trust me, we'll get into wrestling fans, so give us a minute here, because I'm going to tie everything together. You're thrust in to one of the biggest franchises in television. You can't go a channel, it seems like, either in a syndicated situation, we're running into that program. What led you, because I think I've read some info on you, that you had done some stuff with the Walt Disney Company as well as a script supervisor, or I may be wrong. What
no,
led
yeah, you? I've had a bunch of different jobs. Actually, that stuff was after Friends. But yeah, I...
Okay, how did
I've
you get
been,
Friends?
Oh, it's a large story. Someone asked me, where did you start your career? Well, I started in my mom's womb, but we won't
go
back that far. But no, it goes actually before I even went to high school. I had a very... you know, not life-altering experience. When I was like 13 years old, my parents and I took a trip to Los Angeles, and we went to see a sitcom taping of the show Family Matters. Everybody remember Urkel? Raise your hand if you remember Urkel. So we went to see that. So if you're, it was taped at the Sony lot, which if you've ever been to Los Angeles, is one of the more older lots in town. So the guard messed up, and he let us wander around this soundstage, this studio. So we were wandering around, and they were shooting the movie Hook. I don't remember that movie with Robin Williams. And my dad and I are wandering around like nobody – as long as you don't look like like a tourist, you know, we were just kind of wandering around. And, like, I don't know why we weren't dressed like tourists, but we were. And I saw and said hello to Robin Williams and Steven Spielberg. It's like, hi, you know. And they're like, hi. And it wasn't like we weren't asking for autographs. It was a cool – I'm like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to work in Hollywood. And I'd been a huge wrestling fan my entire life, you know. So after college, I went to Emerson College. If you're looking for a good broadcasting school to learn television, I recommend that. I had a choice. I was going to try and work for ECW back in Philadelphia/New York. My parents told me no. So I moved to California and I worked on a bunch of different stuff. I worked for an agent who represented most of the Simpsons writers. So, you know, actually my first interview in, outside of the agency was working on the Simpsons, and worked at a bunch of different shows and worked for Wolfgang Peterson, who did The Perfect Storm. And I was there about 2 weeks when I met this girl going, "Hey, they're looking for a writer's assistant at Friends. How fast can you type?" I'm like, 70 words a minute. She's like, "Can you do 100? I said, "I sure as heck can try." So I spent 2 weeks learning how to type as fast as possible because, as you know, it's, you know, it was one of the top shows, and I beat out everybody else they had trying. I think I ended up getting about 82 words a minute. I beat out everybody else, and they liked me, and the girl before me was actually, I don't know if you saw the story about the writer's assistant who was suing them for sexual harassment, that story that was out a couple of years ago. I replaced her, which was ironically funny enough. So, yeah. So, and I also went to college with her, I found out after. So, yeah.
Were you sexually harassed like she was?
No. But she also apparently used to make and design dildos. In the writer's room and try and sell them to the writers, most of which were men. So, that's all hearsay. I wasn't there, so I didn't know. But you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, so that was my entry into the lovely world. And you know what? Everything she said in that thing is true, but that's a writer's room. They're going to make dick jokes. They're going to make jokes like that. That's what they do. That's just part of the room. You know what I mean? Like, that's what being in a comedy environment was. And that was the perfect setup for me to be ready for, you know, pro wrestling, to realize that you're, you know what I mean? This is the world that you're walking into. So.
So what you see on like 30 Rock and Aaron Sorkin's show when it was on Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip with a writer's room, that is pretty much what it's like. It's a bunch of people around a conference table going, okay, what do you want Chandler to do this week? What is Joey doing this week? Is that how it works?
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of it. I mean, we used to do this actually, and I think we played this exercise too. Like, we would, you know, in a story break meeting when we had nothing, we would go around the table and just first thing that came to your mind for a story. Joey has a twin, but it's not really a twin, which actually ended up being one of the episodes. You know, we just go as rapid fire because the faster you can think on your feet, especially in comedy, the less, you know what I mean? Like, anyone could sit and write a brilliant screenplay over 6 years. But if you can write one in 6 weeks, you know what I mean? You have a better chance to keep churning out material. So that was, I always pride myself in how quickly I can get stuff done because of that training. You know what I mean? Thinking on your feet and all that stuff, especially on stage at a sitcom, you'll have to, like, a joke doesn't play as well. You got to come up with a new joke right there on the floor. And how fast can you come up with something funnier than you spent a week coming up with? So those are all kind of things you would learn, you know, in the environment of sitcoms. And I worked on a bunch of different ones. I worked on Bob Patterson, which was Jason Alexander's sitcom, after Seinfeld, which was a horrible failure. And then I worked with Steve Martin on a sketch comedy show that no one saw. And then I worked with Betty White and Alfred Molina and Stephen Root and Kaley Cuoco from Big Bang Theory on Ladies Man, which no one saw. And then Stephanie McMahon came calling.
Now, how does that happen? How does she come to you? Is it your agent taking you?
No, I had submitted every, like, May, basically new shows or staffing and stuff. So I had sent my resume over. This was after I worked at Friends a couple of times, like 300. But I had known, Brian Gewirtz's uncle was actually a client of the agency I worked at. So, and I didn't even know Brian that well. We had some mutual friends, and it wasn't even through that that I got the interview. It just, I kept sending, my resume. Eventually, the day we were canceled on Bob Patterson, it was in November. I'll never forget it. I get home, and there's a letter from WWE with the stationery and everything. I'm like, asking me to please, mail in 3 sample storylines, and they'll be in touch. And I mailed in 3 sample storylines and heard nothing for about 3 months. And then I finally got a phone call from a woman by the name of Jen Unick, who was Stephanie's assistant. And then I did a phone interview with Stephanie, and they flew me out, and I met with the creative team, and most of which are still there, and this was almost 10 years ago, and, then I was hired. The end. Not the end, but
yeah.
The end of that.
How much, for fans that are they're ridiculous like me that get DVDs to review, Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara had been in your seat before they left to go to WCW. How much did you know about what WWE Creative did at that point? Because they had a great interview series with Wade Keller, and then Vince put out a book recently, WCW Kill Vince Russo, where he talked about, before going back to TNA, he talked about going back to seeing the WWE writer's room. And in the book, he describes, I believe it was Heyman and Michael Hayes standing in a room with what Russo described like a bunch of scared 20-some-odds.
Was yeah, and I was one of those scared 20-somes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was in the room, but, you know, I haven't actually read his book, so, you know, the short version of Vince Russo's return was we found out at 9:30. He showed up at 10:30. We broke story all day. We all tried to work with him. At about 4, he said, well, I got to go. I'll see you guys in a couple weeks. I got to go close my CD warehouse. And he took off. And Vince came back and said, where is Russo? We said, he left. He said, he won't be back for a little bit. And he said, what do you mean he left? He just left. And he, you know what I mean? And the things he pitched was the relaunch of WCW, not that purse and things. He wanted to strip. If you've heard this one before, raise your hand. He wanted to strip the champion and have a tournament.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, it was the culture had changed there. Before it was him and Ed Ferraro pitching right to Vince, and, you know, Steph got put in charge and she hired us. You know what I mean? And scared 20-year-olds? No. Maybe we were scared of him, but, you know what I mean? Just because we knew the pre-installed knowledge, but, you know, I have a lot of respect for him because he's been at least able to continue working. You know, he's been writing wrestling for upwards of 11 years. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's having done it for 6 full time and now 2 producing wise, it's not easy to be trying to create something new on a daily basis. So, you know, beyond that, you know, his description is his own. So
I have just one. Oh, sorry, Mace. I didn't hear you.
Go.
No.
Paper, rock, scissors, go.
No, I do. I have a question. Now, you are yourself an admitted wrestling fan.
Yes, sir.
And during the middle part of the decade, you know, after the demise of WCW and the dominance of WWE being the only predominant wrestling company before TNA and ROH rose up, there was a lot of chatter from the internet community and hardcore wrestling fans about why are they letting these guys from Nickelodeon and from, you know, Friends, for an example, write these mm-hmm. storylines. They have no clue what's going on, you know, what
right.
wrestling's supposed to be about. As an admitted wrestling fan, are there a lot of wrestling fans in that writing room, or are a lot of them just writers?
You have to at least know something about it to write it. And that's actually the reason I started the podcast, and Court Bauer and I were talking about it today. The whole thing will drop in about 5 hours. I'm going to put it up on iTunes in about 5 hours.
Cool.
Everyone has a different background. All of us have different stories, and the internet wrestling community's view of us is as skewed as the wrestling community's view of them. Just like everyone in the internet wrestling community is not living in their basement eating Cheetos, living with their parents, you know, it's an equal comparison. You know, I'm a 25-year wrestling fan. Court Bauer's been a lifelong wrestling fan. Andrew Goldstein's a lifelong wrestling fan. Jensen Karp wasn't. He watched when he was a kid, and he watched the Attitude Era. Everyone has different stories, but I would take a writer who's never seen it before over someone who's been a 25-year fan who doesn't understand how to work in an environment with other people. For example, there was a writer's assistant who, as a writer's assistant, your job is to take notes and organize the pitches and put the information in a way that the writers could do it. That was my same job at Friends. Doesn't matter how great a writer I am, if you can't organize thoughts, how can you be expected to write? And there was a writer's assistant who came in. He would sit there as Vince was talking, not say anything, big wrestling fan, not write anything. And then when Vince was done, as we're digesting what he says, he would pitch an idea to Vince. That's not how you work in any business. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, if you're, I would take a writer who I can teach a little enough about wrestling, because we had wrestling people. You had Michael Hayes, Dusty Rhodes, Ted DiBiase, and a bunch of other really good wrestling minds. But as far as creativity, sometimes you need a writer. And I know I can see eyes rolling all over the wrestling universe. But you need writers in everything. But you need, obviously, a captain who understands it. I don't know if that answers your question, but I feel very passionate about that. So,
no, it was a well executed answer. That's what I was looking for, because you had some storylines that just made people scratch their head and go, why are they doing this? Why would you even begin to do that? And to hear, you know,
here's the short answer. Here's the very short answer. There is not one thing that airs in that television show that does not go through the filter of Vince McMahon. So everything begins and ends with him. It's his company. It's his checkbook. So as much as we get our fingers pointed at, and trust me, no, I am no genius. First T-shirt, or one of the first T-shirts I'm coming out with, is I am no genius. I only work as hard as one. I'll work. You know what I mean? Like that. That like there's no geniuses in the business. Vince McMahon is the closest thing to a genius, and sometimes he misses. Everyone makes quote unquote mistakes, and there are storylines. Katie Vick is a Vince McMahon idea. You know what I mean? Like, and he admitted he thought it was funny to him. You know what I mean? And you know what? It's his paycheck, or it's not his paycheck. It's his checkbook. It's his company. If he wanted to have two dogs, do something in the ring, as long as it's within the standards of the network that he's broadcasting on, he's going to do it because he believes this is what is entertaining. And 9 times out of 10 or 6 times out of 10, he's usually right. No one is ever perfect. So that's my best answer for that.
No, it was a well eloquented answer. I agree with you. It's a great answer. I liked hearing it. That's what I wanted.
Awesome. Well, good. We will all get gold stars today.
Hooray!
Can we get ice cream after? Because I'm kind of jonesing for ice cream.
We'll have to check the fridge.
Rocky Road.
Whoever's in Cleveland, I know it's cold there. Just pack some cold air and send it to me. So. I'm going to Chicago in a couple of days, which I'm not really looking forward to because it's going to be cold. So I live in Los Angeles, so I'm a creature of warm. So
we'll address Chicago in a few moments. There, okay. Mace has been quiet. I believe he's been formulating the perfect
question. Hit me.
Well, not so much formulating, and unfortunately, you've already partially answered this question. I was actually going to get you to sit us down. Sort of what goes on in a WWE creative meeting from sort of the minute you walk in the door and sit down.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, how does the creative process work for those of us who haven't had a chance? Because I know over here in Australia, we just sit around in somebody's lounge room, drink piss, and then throw out random ideas. But it's much more structured from what you've done.
I mean, so you're looking just for...
just an explanation of the creative process.
I mean, I'll stack it just, it's kind of like a writer's room in a, you know, Hollywood thing. There's a head writer that leads the discussion. You know, I don't agree with this philosophy, but this is how it's kind of done there. Things are written week to week, with sometimes a long-term picture, in place. And a head writer would kind of organize everyone's ideas for the quote unquote 10 or 11 segments. And then, we kind of would pitch them to Vince, and then he would decide what he liked and what he didn't. And then the show would be written. I would try and at least, write a show that I believed in from A to Z to pitch him, and if he changed it, great, but I at least wanted to kind of like, remember when you were in school, show us your work when you did math. That's kind of like what I would try to do. Here's how I see this whole thing. If you don't like it, we'll change some of it, part of it, but at least as opposed to, I was thinking A or B or C. It's like going up to a girl and saying, so we're going to go to either A, B, C, or D, or E for dinner. I don't think, she'll be like, wow, it's an indecisive man. Why would I want to be with that person? So, you know, I try to at least... You know, and pitching anything, if you don't believe in it, no one's going to buy it. So that's the short version of how the process works there.
And the other thing that I'm wanting to know, and you're talking about, you know, the way people can see things. One of the things that I've heard around through the internet wrestling community is that within the writer's room, wrestling is a dirty word. Is that correct, or is it again?
Usually, we would actually take... we would capture one fan a year, like a guy like by the name of Mike Sempervivi, and we would every time anyone said wrestling, we would punch that person in the stomach, just to punish one of the internet wrestling community. No, I mean these are these broad stroke stories that get painted. You know, Vince likes the term sports entertainment because he owns it, just like he likes the term Dolph Ziggler because he owns it. He likes to have created the world of sports entertainment because wrestling existed before Vince McMahon. He likes to own everything. So if he could change, you know, if it was World Sports Entertainment, you know, I'm sure he could, but that would change more letters having to be changed. So, but it's not, it still happens in a ring. He's still a fan of wrestling. When it's done right, he loves it.
We have a question from our chat room. Jersey Girl would like to know if you want to name names, you can. Was there any specific writers during your term as writer assistant and eventually taking over as a lead writer that you just sat there and maybe went to Stephanie and said, that guy, he's got to go. He's creeping me out. He's annoying me. You know, he's doing this or that. Was there ever that kind of situation? And if you want to throw someone under a bus, we have a very nice one.
No, like I don't believe has. I don't believe pushing anyone in front of a bus. Usually people would find their way into the bus in due time. I actually have I learned that the phrase, everything usually works itself out. And I'm sure some people say that about me. You know, I was there 6 years. It's a very hard environment, and some people just, the best way I could say it as far as, some people can't own up for their own mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes when I worked there. You know, I don't think I was the easiest person to work with at times. I felt like though I got better with it. I was 26 years old when I went to work there. No one knows what the heck they're doing at 26. As much as they try to make you believe it, you know, it takes time. And I'm 35 now. Oh my God. And you know, you learn better with age, but there's personality clashes with everything. But at the end of the day, you always had to respect how hard someone would work. And I know how hard no one would work harder than me. I would be there until it was necessary. Michael Hayes, as much as we would disagree on some things, he goes, well, you know, nobody works harder than you. Yeah, because I care. And I wouldn't be doing this website if I didn't care. I love wrestling, which was another idea I had for the website name, but I decided to go with a little bit more, I want wrestling as opposed to love, because I don't think I'm in love with it. I think I like it a lot and I'd like to go steady with it, but, I'm not ready to proclaim love. So
not getting down on one ring and looking at wrestling going, marry me.
Yeah, I'm 35 and I'm not married, so I'm not sure I can marry wrestling. So.
And don't feel bad, Dave. The owner of this network, Tim, is older than Moses and he still doesn't know what the hell he's doing. So it's okay.
Nobody knows. I know 50-year-olds who haven't figured out their lives. So everyone figures out their life at a different rate. I feel like I got a good control over at least what I want out of my life. And, you know, everyone's like, well, you go back to WWE for sure. No, not in the current system because it doesn't foster, you know, there are great moments there, but, you know, there are people there that are out for themselves as opposed to the product. And those people will continue making money for themselves and not worry about, look at their business of the last 2-3 years. The pay-per-view buy rates have gone from 200,000 to 120. Something's not working. Something needs to be changed. And hopefully they will change it. I have a lot of faith in some of the people there that hopefully they will change it.
You brought up, I may have mispronounced the gentleman's name, Brian Gewirtz?
Gewirtz.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Gewirtz. He doesn't like when you call him Gewirtz, so here he doesn't like you. So.
Okay. I apologize, Brian. Don't send McDivitt after me.
I'm sure he's not listening.
Sean Oliver's, hey, I never know who's listening to this show on certain nights. I get some pretty famous people from what I'm told. At one point, you did become the head writer to SmackDown while Brian was the head writer on Raw. Did you two ever sit together and go, well, I have this idea. It may not work on your show, but it may work on mine. Was there ever like some creative battling? I like hardcore, I hate you stuff, but that little creative, you know, if I do this now, oh, I need to do that. Was that something good if it existed for both shows to have that creative sense? Since you really didn't have it, you didn't have like ROH is now on Monday night before Raw, you didn't have a WCW to go head to head with, and until TNA showed up on Spike TV, you didn't have that either. So did you create a competition between Raw and SmackDown to help out storyline work?
Yeah, I mean that you know, the teams are split. Actually, the teams were split in May of 2002 when Paul Heyman was in charge of SmackDown, and it was me and I think it was Michael Hayes, and it was Brian and Ed Koski who's still there. And the teams were split into that same game of competition, which it was important. You know, there still needs to be a ref in the middle, which was Steph, and then a boss at the top, you know, Vince. You know, and we would pitch the best shows we had, and it was up to the boss to decide what he liked. Sometimes we pitch an idea and it end up on the other show and you go, huh. But as time changed, as SmackDown went from Thursday to Friday and then changed networks, as you can tell, SmackDown became less and less of a priority. And then they launched ECW, which was even less of a priority. The Raw is the number one show for that company. Why do you think The Undertaker came back to Raw? You know what I mean? Like, that is where the most eyeballs are. It's live. So I knew when I took over SmackDown in February of 2003, and I was in charge of it for 3 to 4 years, you know, it was, I knew my position, but what I would strive for, you know, was finding talent that we could start and build. You know, I mean, John Cena started on SmackDown. Mr. Kennedy started on SmackDown. Carlito started on SmackDown. The World's Greatest Tag Team started on SmackDown. You can go through the time period and look at all the talent we started and got ready to go to Raw and looked vice versa, and it usually all the good talent that ended up being really important started on SmackDown because we would have to find guys. Court and I were telling the story today. I'll be on the podcast, and I think there's a clip up on the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/IWantWrestling, about Mr. Kennedy's debut and how, you know, we had scouted Kennedy in OVW for months and just basically let him do his gimmick on a Velocity show when, you know, something came up that it just kind of ended up being on TV. And Michael Hayes was like, well, don't you think he's perfect for Raw, Vince? And Michael was like, but he's on SmackDown. They started him. They recruited him. He's SmackDown. So it all just came down to, you know, how hard you work. And, yeah, I mean, we would work all together. We would work both shows. So I produced segments for Raw, and Brian would produce stuff for SmackDown when he was there. And that just kind of was what it was. So,
which leads to, you brought up a bunch of names there. Also, JBL was SmackDown for a while, and
yep.
Brock was SmackDown. Wrestling Fanatic in our chat room wanted to know, who was your favorite wrestler, sports entertainer, performer to write for? Was there one that you first might have sat there and said, holy crap, no, so-and-so is saying something I wrote? I mean, is that a situation that happens? Seriously?
Funaki. I love Funaki. How can you not love Funaki? No, I mean,
number one announcer.
But see, look how simple, like, how simple a gimmick he had. And when he was doing that stuff, and you know, that he lasted as number one announcer longer than he did Kung Funaki, you know, because it was an easy to understand gimmick. And no, he wasn't my favorite, but he's one of my favorite people in the world because he showed up to work. He'd be easy to work with. You know, I wrote in the blog today that's up about, you know, the early parts of John Cena's character, which he went back to on Monday, you know, the rap character, and why that worked. It wasn't just simply because he was rapping, but because he did it consistently. Look at how over Alberto Del Rio's submission is right now. Why is it over? Because he does it every week, and people tap out to it. If you're consistent in the wrestling business, and in any business, you get to learn what a character is, and then you get the expectations, and then the writing or the storytelling kind of goes from there. So I like characters that had time. JBL had time to develop. Eddie Guerrero had time to develop. John Cena had time to develop. Anything that has time and isn't have the rug pulled out from them were my favorite times there.
You know, one of my favorite SmackDown moments, and I'm not sure the time frame on this, you may have been head of SmackDown at this point, was the Chris Benoit Royal Rumble to WrestleMania run for the title at WrestleMania 20.
Well, he had gone over to Raw at that point.
Well, this is when he was getting into the Rumble.
Oh yeah, when he had the feud with Heyman. Yeah, that was a lot of good stuff. And well, that was good because, you know, Paul came and went from creative a lot of times. But you know, having Paul on the show was always helpful to me because Paul and I get along really well. And you know, he's such an easy character to understand. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't like Benoit because you would have installed knowledge of, well, Benoit left me when I was in ECW and he went blah, blah, blah. So it's an easy understanding. So now he's trying to screw Benoit over from getting his dream. So yeah, he put obstacles. I think he did a mini rumble with the FBI, if I remember that segment right. And then, Heyman, put him as number one. Remember Heyman holding his finger up and Benoit broke his finger. You know what I mean? Like, Benoit, you know, obviously left a bad legacy after, but, you know, those type of characters and those kind of stories were a lot of fun.
The sharpshooter segment, when he had Heyman in the sharpshooter in the middle of the ring with John Cena on the microphone, and every time John Cena went, Chris, he'd torque it back. And you could just see, I mean, the way Heyman sold it, it was almost as if Benoit was just killing him. It was great.
That was an episode. That episode was about Cena. It was like wash your mouth out with soap match. I don't know if you go back. I actually saw it on YouTube today because I was looking up Cena stuff. And yeah, I mean, that was so Cena would do it, and then he would just put them. If Cena won, he'd have his wash. Yeah, he could wash Heyman's mouth out, or I don't know what the stipulation was, but it was a fun little stipulation that wasn't retirement. That, you know, told the story. And yeah, I mean, that was a really good story.
Well, this leads to a question I have now. We saw a couple of years ago, you brought up the word retirement, my brain clicked. We saw a few years ago the retirement match between Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Last year we saw the retirement match between Shawn Michaels and Undertaker. And now, now the blogosphere, the internet wrestling community, and the smart marks are all abuzz because of Triple H and Undertaker this year at Mania and who might retire. Do you think that they've gone overboard with this, with the whole we're going to retire somebody at Mania? Should they let it die down a little bit? I mean, as a creative writer and as someone who spent time on that writing team, do you think it's gone a little overboard?
I think if it, I think if that was its own lone part, but the problem is, quote unquote, retirement has been done to death everywhere else, that it's become an issue. But if you take away everything else, it was just those three, and you didn't know that Ric Flair was back wrestling again, even though he really isn't, but is or whatever. You know, I think I don't mind it once a year you can get away with a retirement, especially when it's iconic people like Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, and Triple H. But when it's, you know, somebody's been in the business 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, it just waters it down. It's like how many explosions can there be in a movie before they stop meaning anything?
Michael Bay.
I was about to say, ask Bay. He wants more and more in the opening, in the closing credits.
Right, and everybody, and there's all kind of, you know, but certain Michael Bay movies now almost are parodies of himself, but he even, like, the last Transformers movie I had to shut off because it just, it was crazy. I couldn't understand, like, I was like, why did I invest the first hour of this into this movie when none of it actually mattered to the second hour? So, anyway, if we want to talk movies, we can do that, too.
Well, we got plenty of time. These guys host a show on Wednesday nights called Utaku Talk Live, which is Geek Fest stuff. So they could, nice. We could, these guys wouldn't even be like, forget the ROH show, talk of movies. We're not going to do that, believe me, fans.
Well, that leads to kind of a follow-up I have. Has the wrestling industry itself, as far as the creative process gotten too complicated? Have they tried to get, you brought up Alberto Del Rio's armbar. It's a simplistic move. I mean, that's something that you learn within the first 2 weeks of training is a basic armbar, and that's all that is. So, I mean, have they gotten too complicated with trying to explain everything and every little minute detail and give it, you know, outrageous and well thought out backgrounds? I mean, can you go back to the days of, you know, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair not liking each other because of, you know, essentially class differences?
It all varies on by the painter that's painting the picture. And this is the difference. The difference between Hollywood and professional wrestling is, in professional wrestling, there are two national companies and a third Miramax/niche company producing content. There are independents underneath of it, but in reality, the scope of those is nowhere near. In Hollywood, how many studios are there? 5, 6, and you know what I mean? Like, there's hundreds of production companies that can produce movies and stuff. There aren't enough places for people to spread their wings creatively. That's why I've enjoyed the Ring of Honor process so much, because we do go slower. The storyline of the Roderick Strong Homicide title match is Roderick Strong won the title. He felt disrespected when Homicide came out and interrupted his celebration. That's the storyline. That is the issue. It's not you ran my cat over with your dog's basket because the dog has diabetes and can't walk. You know what I mean? Like, it's simple stories. Someone was disrespected. Everyone can understand that. Everyone can understand that story. You know, someone's goal for the title, when Tyler Black was going for the title, that's a very simple story. And some people are like, well, it's not creative enough. It's not this. It's not that. If it works with the fans, if it draws one more fan than the week before, then I'd call it successful. If Raw's rating went up a point 0.01 every week for 52 weeks, that's consistent. But because it, you know what I mean, that is success. But when it, you know, goes up and down, then you think, oh, it's not a success. I think people are judging, set your end goal and tell the story you want to tell and hope that eventually it will attract an audience. I think the ability to change on the fly has hurt pro wrestling.
Well, you've been with ROH for what, 3 years now, you said?
Two years.
2 years? So you might have missed it entirely, the CZW ROH.
Yeah, I came in right when Adam Pearce, I came in when TV started, so.
Okay. I mean, that was a really good, well thought out kind of you know, storylines, but that had true life seeds and legitimate, yeah, you know, legitimate ill will from either company.
Right.
I mean, Jim Cornette lost a tooth over it.
Yeah, I mean, anything that's based in reality is always really good. You know, the reason the Taker Triple H story will work is just like you said, he retired my best friend. You know what I mean? That work, that everyone can understand that. My best friend can't do something because of you. Easy to understand. They don't need to do anything. That story, that's done. They there's no angle. Triple H doesn't need to delay out Undertaker. Like, that. If you're not sold on this match already, I don't think there's anything they can do except get you more hyped for it. But there's no other angle. That's the story. And I think if Triple H tries to run Undertaker over with a bus, you know, is that really going to help sell this anymore? Is that going to make any more people buy it? It's done. You know what I mean? I think Cena and Miz need a little bit more. You know what I mean? But I think The Rock helps it. You know, certain stories like Alberto Del Rio and Edge, I think, needs a little bit more because I don't think it's there just yet. But Triple H and Undertaker is there because there's your story. You retired my best friend. Oh, by the way, he's going to be the referee. Now there's a question of, is Shawn Michaels going to screw, like, is he going to take the streak away from the Undertaker that he tried to take for 2 years in a row? That, to me, is it's sold. Done. You know what I mean?
Were you a fan of that last night with no dialogue,
yes,
no touching, no nothing between the two?
Yep. I thought it was great. I thought, I was one of the first people to go, hey, maybe it is Sting. I had no information, and that's the thing. If you go to my website, I always say, I'm scoops free. I don't have any scoops. I don't have any, I knew it was going to be Sting. You know, an insider of an insider told me that this was going to happen. I thought, hey, it'd be cool if it was Sting, because this was before we heard the Triple H thing. But, you know, I think that's a really good story, and I think it's a good way to do it. And I thought, hey, guess what? You're going to tune in next week to find out why now. If they would have said, you retired my friend, we're going to fight at WrestleMania, then what are they going to do next week? And with two talents like that, they're going to be in control and make the storyline work so they don't have to do too much, which they shouldn't. It's done. You know what I mean? The story is easily laid out. I hate that it came out. I don't like when stuff like that comes out. Even though people say that I did this and did that and I was a leak, I like when things are hidden. I like when the audience has to tune in and find out stuff. I find that to be really good storytelling. Like, am I going to tell you the end of Titanic? You know what I mean? Do you want to know? Well, I guess you know the end of that. But you know what I mean? Like, do you want to know the end of a movie before you go see it? I don't know why people must know. I have to know what the finish is at WrestleMania. Why? Can't you just enjoy it? Like that's where I just go, you know what, if you care, if that's the only reason, oh, the finishes were predictable, then why do you care? Why do you care then? Like, it's predictable. If it's part of a story, it's predictable that John McClane overcomes the bad guy at the end of Die Hard. But it does it. It's the right story. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's where I get in these discussions that I just go, why do you even bother? Why are you a fan of this if you don't enjoy it?
He is David Lagarma joining us here on All I Will of Wrestling Radio, 267-297-1397. For some reason, these people are afraid of Get. He's not a wrestler. He's a laptop person like me. I've written 8 screenplays, so I know where the guy's coming from. Wrestling Fanatic wants to know, what is your view on title changes as far as long reigns versus short reigns? Is this a situation in is wrestling to a point where the Samoa Joe long-term reign in ROH or Hulk Hogan's 4-year reign, or even go far as back as Bruno Sammartino's 8-year reign, in the 3 weeks to a pay-per-view, 4 weeks to a pay-per-view, is that long-term champion gone forever in wrestling?
I think the model is broken as far as, I don't think, everyone says, oh, pay-per-view is a dead model. If it is, then UFC is driving a really broken car. What works about UFC? The fact that your pay-per-view attractions aren't on every month, and they've spread it out. Again, the brand of UFC, like WWE, is a brand. But underneath that, they have champions and they have people who fight. What they have done is spread it all out and build up the overall brand, like WWE was back in the Attitude Era. Remember how everyone used to get together and watch WWE pay-per-views? Now they don't. Vince talks about, oh, our pay-per-view numbers are down because more people are getting together and watching pay-per-views. No, I don't think that's the reason. I think it's a reason, but I don't think it's the reason. How many people go to a sports bar and watch UFC? You know, Hooters or any of those places, and there's 100 people in there. Well, that's you know, 100 times 50, that's a, I can't do math, is that $5,000 or something? As if, whatever the number is, you know what I mean? That's eyeballs in the product, but still, it's that they're not lost, they're fans. And I think you need to present attractions that you, A, want to pay for, and B, look forward to. I think it's good storytelling. If Samoa Joe's going to be champion for a while, you know, 2 years, you better have five compelling stories for them to have over that year or 4 year period or 4 month periods. It's not just saying, well, this guy being a champion. Well, if he's just wrestling guys and then having matches, you know, unless the stories are compelling, that, and I don't mean storyline, but I mean like challenging Brian Danielson and, you know, Brian can't get it done, and then that leads to another story. You know, I think really well-told stories can be told for as long as possible.
Since we've been doing this weekly segment of WrestleMania Memories, from your creative standpoint, and I know you were sitting there when we were chatting before, you're like, I don't want to answer these kind of questions, but I got to ask at least one. In your mind, when you're sitting there in the creative room getting to Mania, of all the years that you were involved, is there one particular storyline that you sit there and you can tell if you have kids or grandkids, Dad, Uncle Dave helped Vince McMahon create that, and damn, I'm proud of it? Or is there one that you sit there going, let's get all the footage of that and burn it forever?
No, I mean, I don't have regrets on anything, because it's taking a chance on something and trying it. You know what I mean? The people go, well, you, and this will be my internet wrestling community voices, they have voices based on the writers. You were handled with this idea. Why did you do that? Well, because at the time, this was the decision made. You know what I mean? Unless you're put in a position, you know, and have to make a decision in the time period, that's your job. Just like, hey, buddy, you faxed that thing incorrectly. You know what I mean? Everyone has decisions they face every day in their job. As far as things, people will think I'm out of my mind, which they already do. One of my favorite things that I came up for at WrestleMania was Boogeyman kissing Charmel with a mouthful of worms. Because I thought it was a WrestleMania moment. Like, you know what I mean? And at the time, and Court and I were talking about Boogeyman today, look at the Boogeyman character. He debuted in November, and he made that WrestleMania. You know what I mean? He got so hot, people were into him so much, that the idea of this feud he had had with Booker, that the finish of the match wasn't what was going to be remembered. This was, hopefully, in my mind, going to be King Kong Bundy dropping the elbow on Little Beaver. Here's the one who ended up not really becoming a character that much after that due to other issues. You know what I mean? Like, here was, to me, WrestleMania was this guy who was known for the worms kissing the wife of the guy that he was in a match with. I thought that, and again, that's not the biggest WrestleMania moment, but for me, that was something I came up with. I pitched to the talent. The talent were cool with and thought it was awesome. I pitched to Vince, and we did it. And that's just a simple little thing that popped in my mind when you brought that up.
I'm going to transition here to ROH, because as I said, it's amazing to – I was in Huntsville, Alabama in 2002 when TNA was launched, so it was about around the time – that Rob and Gabe and Carrie and everyone else that was there, Doug Gentry, launched ROH. And they're going to be celebrating their 9th anniversary this Saturday at Frontier Fieldhouse, 7:30 bell time on iPay-Per-View, which is GoFightLive.tv.
8:30 Eastern. It's 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 Central. So.
Yeah. Can you address this situation that's come up with HDNet? Was it something that you guys were aware of a few months ago, and how is ROH handling this? Is there something in the works to possibly go to another network, or will ROH go back to the DVD model, in your opinion,
The company, ROH is not a DVD company. It is a content creation company. We are in the business of creating content now. Depending on where you put that content. Look at Netflix. Look at Blockbuster. Blockbuster is for sale. The four of us could get together and buy Blockbuster tomorrow if we wanted to. They're in bankruptcy and they're trying to sell because the idea of going to a store and renting a movie is now changing forever. There will always be a video store. So it's like there always will be a library in every town. But the way content is consumed is changing. Netflix now is instant streaming. There's red boxes on every corner. You know, ROH's place is trying to create content to feed these models.
This event has, as you mentioned, some interesting matchups, and we're not going to go every single match. I'll announce them later on during a wrap-up. But some matches pique my interest because of having friendships with folks. There is a World Tag Team title match announced for the show. The Kings of Wrestling of Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli with, damn, that Shane Hagedorn are going to take on our friends, Kenny King and Rhett Titus, the All Mat Express. What creatively in your mind, is it just Kenny and Rhett personalities that have gotten them over with the fans? Is it a characterization thing? In your mind,
that's
what makes
are.
The All Mat Express so great?
That's who they are. If you've spent time with Kenny and Rhett,
there's oh, Kenny,
really
yes.
not much. Is Kenny King any different than Kenny's real name? You know what I mean? Like, if you spent time with Kenny, is that any different? No,
ooh.
That's who he is. He likes women. He likes to hang out. He's very cocky. Do you know what I mean? That's who he is. Same with Rhett Titus. That's who their characters are. And the great part of this story that we're doing on Saturday, and if you watched the ROH TV show last night, is the Kings kind of overlooked these guys. You know what I mean? They're like, I think it was they call themselves the All-Night Express. We call them the 5-Minute Express because that's how long they'll last with us. They overlook them because in their mind, we don't need anybody. Like, we can beat these guys no problem. And, you know, the All-Nights have a lot to prove. They have a lot to prove to everybody that they're a legitimate tag team, that they're going to be guys that are going to be dealt with in the business. That's what I like about this match because it's different than the story that the Briscoe, Haas, and Benjamin are having. It's an interesting story because it's two, quote-unquote, bad guys having a match. But the story is one bad guy team overlooking the other one. So I think it'll be a really interesting match in that vein.
Yeah, you also brought up the former World's Greatest Tag Team. I know you can't use that because Jerry McDivitt will come knocking on your door. Was this a match that fans wanted when you go to live ROH events or TV tapes that said, we want the Briscoes versus Haas and Benjamin? Or was this something creative that you, Delirious, and Carrie said, this is an inevitable, this has to happen even if the fans don't want it because storyline-wise it's there?
Well, you know, when we first approached Charlie and Shelton, you know, they looked at everybody that was there, and I think there were three matches that popped up that I think everybody would want to see them against. One was the Kings of Wrestling, two was the Briscoes, and the third would be the American Wolves. You know what I mean? As far as the teams that are known as ROH. The Wolves one I don't think we're going to see anytime soon, but maybe we will, because, you know, they're both on different paths as far as who the Wolves are. But, yeah, I think this is definitely one of those matches, because, you know, Charlie and Shelton, you know, they are wrestling's greatest tag team. You know, before they didn't do any single stuff in ROH, there's a lot of really good material and stuff, and those two have something to prove, I think, to the world because of their journey in wrestling. You know what I mean? They were the greatest tag team for a 2-year period when in a company that does not like tag teams, and they want to prove that company made a mistake with tag team wrestling. That's a great story. And here are the Briscoes who have been in ROH for 9 years, and this is their house. That's just simple. You know what I mean? There wasn't one angle. I mean, they had that 8-man tag match where they couldn't get along. But as far as story, I get it. I'm buying. I want to see which team is better. Sold. American.
It seems that every promotion now has some form of secondary championship. At one point it was the Pure Championship. Now you have the World Television Championship, which is around the waist of the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels. Do you think he has got that championship has gotten over, or do you think it's a hit and miss situation? And thoughts on this matchup, this 2 out of 3 fall 30-minute time limit with Eddie Edwards?
I think the TV title kind of was sitting in neutral for a while with the 10-minute hunt. I think Eddie kind of got caught in the middle between being a good guy and a bad guy. I hate the terms baby faces and heels. I just, you know what I mean? I think it's the being a good guy and a bad guy. But once he started defending the title every week on TV or every so often, I felt like he was having matches that were spectacular. And if you saw the Daniels-Edwards match on TV from Louisville, that was a tremendous match. And the fact that they're going to have more time and the fact that it's 2 out of 3 falls and it's internet pay-per-view where we can go all night if we have to, not that we are going to, trust me, I'd like a good 3.5-hour show. You know, I think it's going to be probably, I think both of them know on this stacked card, you know what, maybe we just will go out there and have a match that people will be talking about the next day. That's pretty cool. That's a good position to be in, and most companies don't give guys that position.
Now, I'm just wondering one little thing about the creative process in Ring of Honor. Like, it's not a bigger writing staff like it was in WWE or anything like that. Do the boys have more input? Do they come up to you and say, hey, I've got an idea, and then run something through with you, and you take it away going, okay, I like it, but we might tweak this, this, and this? Or is it the guys that actually just write the shows just sitting there going, just like your sitcom days, pitching ideas.
Hence why I list myself as a Ring of Honor producer. I don't write anymore when it comes to pro wrestling. We try, and for me, it's kind of like teaching the guys how to fish. I kind of want to see what the guys have. That's why we did a lot of, in the last 2 years, the sit-down interviews. We don't usually, those are just questions that we ask the guys about how they feel about stuff. Those are not, you know, we don't write those out. That's just those guys talking about how they feel about the matchups they're in. We try to create it's as close to reality. Hey, guess what? Everything on television is written. You know, I'm watching The Office right now. That's written. That's scripted. But you know what I mean? A lot of it could be improv, and that's just, we try to let the guys learn from themselves because hopefully that makes their skills stronger. So it's a very collaborative environment. It's a different structure, and that's why I enjoy it so much.
You mentioned Glory by Honor 9, which had some technical issues. If you watched it on GoFiLive.tv, were you aware of what was going on live when you were in Manhattan Center, or was that told to you guys after the fact?
No. That was a computer issue. Not to bore you with computer stuff, but we are on a computer right now anyway. There was a firmware issue with the TriCast that they were using, which meant that any minute that the thing would restart. So if you ever got the blue screen of death on the computer, it was a lot like that, and we didn't know when it was going to happen again. I mean, the biggest time, and every time that it happened three times on that show, every time it got shorter because they figured out how to get everything back up. The first one was 5 minutes. It's actually a blog I wrote for the ROH site about the 5 minutes that, you know, we were down at 4 minutes in the middle of the match. And then the home audience didn't miss anything. It wasn't even a technical issue. It was a firmware issue. It wasn't anything to do with streaming. And that's my other favorite misconception about internet pay-per-view. If you have a crappy internet line, if you have dial-up, you're not going to be able to watch the show streaming perfectly. If you've got great high-speed internet and you're not downloading Busty Babes 4, you'll be able to watch the show as good as possible because the stream they put out is the best possible stream. You know what I mean? But if the people, and if you're running 16 windows on your computer, it's not going to work great. You know what I mean? This is why the cable industry will always, I think, exist, because you have a cable box. It's a standard piece of equipment that everyone has exactly the same. Everyone's computer is differently. Everyone's experience on the web is different because of how it works. Do you know what I mean? Like, your computer is different than mine, so how you watch a video will look different and run differently and load faster on your computer as compared to mine. So as long as you have a decent internet connection and a computer that's not running 100 things, you should have as good an experience as your internet provides.
Our god of internet radio, Sir Ockin, is nodding his head and going, I understand exactly what he's saying.
So, I mean, the problem is you have anyone with a keyboard, my good friend the keyboard jockeys, who are like, ROH is to blame for this horrible stream. No, your brother upstairs who is playing World of Warcraft and tying up all the bandwidth in the house is to blame.
Hey, bashing on the World of Warcraft now.
I know how to get you all. See, I know how to be a bad guy. I know how to get you guys all riled up.
I'm ducking and covering with the World of Warcraft duo that's in the room here. Let me steer this back on track for a second.
Awesome.
When we had Adam Pearce on a few months ago, he had transitioned out of ROH and was doing his NWA Hollywood event. He gave his feelings on the success or failure of this iPay-per-view setup. In your view, is this working? Are fans logging on to GoFiLive.tv and purchasing these events? Or is there a lot more of a pirating situation, or I'll wait and see what happens, or I'll borrow it from somebody? Does ROH keep track of these numbers at all?
Everyone has done better than the last one.
Oh, good.
Everyone has done better than the last one. I think the second one, the Big Bang, did the same, at the end of the day, as far as, you know, live plus the first week. But as far as, you know, and there, we're talking thousands, you know what I mean? Like, if the first one did, I think, 1,000, the second one did 1,001. The next one did 1,200, the next one did 1,400, and then Final Battle did 1,800, and that's live. I never even got the, you know, next day VOD numbers. And the cool thing is you buy it and you can watch it over and over again. Because again, physical media is going away. You're gonna have a hard drive that has everything on it. So the idea that I can stream this at a decent price, you know, I think it's the future. You know what I mean? I think it's, UFC's doing it. And the thing is the difference between us and a UFC or WWE is the cable companies are providing or making that, like UFC, when they run, they use a company called New Lion, which I'm going to write about in a couple of weeks when I cover the UFC show. They have to, the online stream has to be the same price as pay-per-view. So people, you know what I mean? So the cable companies aren't affected. You have a choice, but you still have to pay the same price. We don't have that restriction, so we can present a show at a lower price point to entice people, hey, I want to try this Ring of Honor. It's only $14.99 or it's $19.99. You know what I mean? It's still far cheaper than a TNA pay-per-view or a WWE pay-per-view, so you're not expecting the bells, the whistles, the pyroworks. The pyroworks? I don't know if that's a word. I think that's where you put food in. That's Pyrex. You know, it's a different experience. And if you want to talk piracy, anyone who pirates an internet pay-per-view or a DVD gets no voice, in my opinion, about the future of pro wrestling. If you steal from a pro wrestling company, you don't get allowed to say because you're not paying for it. You know what I mean? If you're a pirate, raise your hand and say, I have no voice in wrestling because I'm stealing. You can enjoy it all you want, but don't ever complain. You know what I mean? Don't ever complain about a show because you are stealing it. You know what I mean? You're taking money out of the guys who are taking falls for you. So if you're stealing, you don't get a voice, in my opinion.
We're proud to say we all pay on our.
You know what I mean? That's the thing. If you're pirating it, then you have no voice. You should just sit there quietly and not say anything. But the people are like, I didn't like that show, and then I had someone Twitter me like, I didn't like the show. I didn't think it was very good. He goes, I watched it on a free stream. I just said you have no voice to me, and I blocked him because it's like you're taking money out of my pocket, and then when the company folds, and you're the first person to go, darn, where's my Ring of Honor? You didn't pay for it. You didn't support the company. And that's we're not going to have television after April 4th. We need you to buy DVDs. We need you to buy internet pay-per-views. We need you to come to live events because that's how a company grows. If you steal it, you have no voice.
Now, this match is very intriguing to me because, as I said, I remember I am one of the fortunate, like a Lenny Leonard and a lot of folks from the IPW WrestlePlex days here in St. Pete, Florida, that can remember Roderick Strong as one half of a tag team with his brother Cedric. And to see him now flourish all these years later as the ROH World Champion. We had Jim Cornette on. He couldn't stop praising Roderick. Is this he had a great match with Davey Richards. Is this Roderick's toughest test in Homicide? Or is there someone else in ROH that you think could be the ultimate test? Is it Homicide?
I think it'll be interesting. It's now a street fight. I don't know if you guys saw that or not, but it's now. It's,
yeah,
it
I got
like
it. Knowles Ford Barrio street fight.
Yes. I'll just say street fight because I can't say that word you just said. I'm Italian and I barely can speak English. I think what I like about Roderick, if you saw the promo, and it's part of it's on the YouTube channel, that youtube.com/Ring of Honor, Roderick has really blossomed as far as who he is as a personality. He's a cocky mother humper. You know what I mean? Like, he believes, and he felt so disrespected. He's felt disrespected this whole year because everyone's called him the transitional champion. Everyone thought he was going to lose it to Davey. He proved him wrong, and yet, oh, Homicide's going to take it. Oh, this guy's going to take it. You know what I mean? He's pissed off. And you talk to Roddy, he believes he does not get the respect he deserves. He's been in Ring of Honor since the beginning, and he's always been the bridesmaid, which he would look horrible in a major on a papel dress. I'll just say that right now. But you know what I mean? Like, he is the man. He's got the title, and he's got to – why does he have to prove? You know what I mean? Homicide's the one that went away and has to come back. You know what I mean? Like, that's an easy story, and that's who he is, and that's what I think will be interesting on Saturday is what will he do to continue to have to prove himself to these people.
We've got an interesting question that probably could take an entire hour to answer. So
I bet you can answer in three words.
Okay, well, we'll give it a shot here.
All right, three words.
Jersey Girl wanted to know, there were rumors that when Paul Heyman was interviewed by Dixie Carter, he had mentioned your name possibly as coming in. If you watch TNA currently, give us two or three things that you would change immediately when you walk in the door.
I'm trying to do it in three words. Slower, better stories.
Sound like George Lucas on the set of Star Wars. Faster, more intense.
But, I mean, it's what do we all like about TNA? The talent roster, and then the talent roster. I think they have the, as far as athletic, they have the best athletic talent roster, you know, of the three companies. You know, and I just think as far as all around, you know what I mean? Like, I love their TV slot. I think they could tell a lot of really, they could do a lot more with what they have.
We've talked. I've been one of the folks that have done it on the Twitter thing. I'm still not a big fan of it, but my boss is here at Only World of Wrestling and said you must be a part of the social network. You already have Facebook. You might as well do this Twit thing. People are seeing the number sign and then I Want Wrestling there. You teased the idea of it. Was this site something that when you left WWE that you sat around and said to your friends, you know, oh, I hate what's going on here. I'm sick of, you know, this and that. What was the genesis of iwantwrestling.com? Because as you mentioned, you've had a bevy of former WWE creative folks, and of all people, ESPN's Robert Flores coming on to do podcasting. Take us through the genesis of this site, and are you feeling it's getting around to the wrestling community?
I'm having today. As I answer this question, I think today is my second best traffic day in the history of the site. Let me look real quick as I'm answering this. The site, the idea of I Want Wrestling was an idea that I had when we started marketing Ring of Honor for HDNet, and I had pitched a bunch of vignettes. I don't know if I'm going to do them at this point, but I remember when the Apple ads were on, when it was PC and Mac. And so I wanted to do ads where there was a PC and there was a Mac, but it was entertainment and action. You could figure out which entertainment and action were supposed to be. And it would be a parody of those. And it would have a tagline of I Want Wrestling. And I probably will still do these at some point. But since the Apple commercials went away, it's not I don't think it's as relevant. But I came up with the URL, iwantwrestling.com. And we were going to do it as kind of as a viral marketing campaign for the Ring of Honor show. We ended up not doing the campaign, but I had the URL and I sat on it for a year. And when I decided, you know what? You know, the TV show, I draw, and not meager, but I mean, the amount of days I work a month is small compared to this. So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to just start writing again, because I don't write that much. So, and my take on wrestling is I think people are very negative all the time without ever looking at the positives of it. So I want to talk about what I want out of wrestling, not what I hate in wrestling. I hate that this character does this. All right, I want this character to do that. It's a simple mindset, because there's so much negativity in the world. If you wake up negative every day, you're going to be negative around you, and people don't want to be around you. I don't want to be around negative people. They drive me insane. If you're negative, I'll be like, all right, I'd rather be alone than be with negative people, because they drive me batty. So what I want out of wrestling is something. Tell me what you want. Don't tell me what you don't want. I don't want Samoa Joe to be suplexing people without pay. Tell me what you want. And that was a simple thing. And it started a week before I opened the site. I started Twittering. You know, I one of my favorite things is to send instant feedback on Raw, and it's a lot like my comedy / sitcom days. It's kind of like trying to write a joke or give a good perspective as it's happening, because people are on Twitter watching Monday Night Raw as it happens. So now, if a segment happens, I will send it, and I would tag. And a week before I started the site, I started hashtagging I Want Wrestling, and people started doing it with me, and I was like, well, this is how we're marketing this thing. And now, if you go on during Raw, I would say 5 to 10% of the hashtags I Want Wrestling are me, and everybody else is using it too, which is just simply them saying what they want. So a Dixie Carter, a Vince McMahon, a Kevin Dunn, if they wanted to see what people wanted and instant feedback, they could use this hashtag. They could just click it on Twitter, and they would see a bunch of different feedback from people. It was a simple little thing. And then the site is just a little bit of blogs that, the John Cena one. Like I told the story today of how one rap that John Cena did for Heat didn't air to the house before a match, and the people still cheered him when he was a heel. You know what I mean? Like how it was this great rap he did when he battle rapped a fan. And I went back and watched, and I was like, my God, look how passionate he was with this. How do you not want to tune in and watch this guy? And I just give little perspectives and little nuggets of stuff from my time at WWE. And I'm not telling you whose creative idea was this or that, because that's, and I have no scoops. If you're coming to find out who will be the mystery man on TNA episode 6, I don't have any information for you. But if you want good perspective and you want me to be listening to you, things that happen, like today Dolph Ziggler was on Twitter, looking for a job.
Oh,
and he got an
so
offer
funny.
From a he got an offer from a porn company, which I thought was hilarious. So I Twittered him and said, well, if you're not busy on Saturday, you can come to the Ring of Honor show. And he Twittered me back. So there's a story up about that. And, Dolph, I like Nick Nemeth. I think he's a very talented guy. If he wants to come check out the ROH show, he's more than welcome to, and there'll be a ticket waiting for him at the front. Because I want him to want to like wrestling. You know what I mean? I want him to see the wrestling he wants. So the site's full of stuff like that. And the podcasts have been, I think, my most fun, good English I speak, they've been the most fun I've had with the site. you know, getting Robert Flores was cool. Robert's a wrestling fan. I found him on Twitter. He did an interview with Ken Anderson where Ken mentioned me with the microphone, and we just started talking. Started talking on Twitter, and we've been really good Twitter friends. And we talked for 30 minutes. He's like, I want to do this again. So, and I want to find people that in the media that like wrestling. I want to talk about it because it's not a negative thing to be a wrestling fan. As much as people feel like, oh, I can't talk about it. I went to some, I don't, this guy, Hayward, I don't remember his first name, it's the top of my head, it's jumping off my head. He's a book author, and him and his friend are like, we don't tell anybody we like wrestling. I'm like, why? Just tell them what you want. You know what I mean? Speak out about it. Because the more we speak out, the more passionate we are, the more the companies, I think, will respond. Social media is out there so we all have a voice. And IWantWrestling.com is there to help portray that what you want.
And Dale Legato.
So podcasts are fun and having, and sure.
I can see you running on a campaign.
Yeah, but it works for, you know, it works, and I'm not putting out any, I'm not trying to sell you anything. There will be things to buy. I think there will be, obviously, the site needs to make money at some point. But as far as what I'm putting out there now is a positive message about what you want and giving legitimate creative thoughts on certain things.
Speaking of what you want from wrestling, I have one more question. I'm sorry.
Sure.
Go for it.
You can ask six. I'm kidding. Two.
Oh, wow. We have heard time and time again of rumor and report that wrestlers in the back, when they're given their promo, they are given the full promo word for word.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously last night, somebody didn't write that for Cena. He did that himself. Is it possible to go back to the days when the guys that could talk on the microphone, like a John Cena, like a Randy Orton, like a Miz, can just be given bullet points and say, this is all we want you to hit, the rest is yours? Because I miss those days. That is what I want out of wrestling. I want the talkers to be able to talk, because I can't find anybody who can tell me they didn't like hearing a damn good Ric Flair promo.
Well, sometimes everybody needs an editor. I'll just say that. Everybody needs someone to edit them. I have to self-edit myself on the site. You know what I mean? As far as editing, you know what I mean? Sometimes I like to just write one thing and post it, but I have to go back and read and go, okay, is this going to get across what I needed? I think everyone needs an editor. John Cena does write his own raps. If you read the story I have up on John, that's how that whole character, that whole year, John did every one of those raps. I did one rap line for John, because I'm about as white can be. But there was a line about when we did the Taker vignette where he was out in the circle of fire. He was talking about Waco. I go, Waco on your ass, like a Branch Davidian. I think I gave him the Branch Davidian line off of rhyming MIDI. You know what I mean? Like, I can't rap. That's about as close to rap as I'll give you. But John came up with that stuff. I said, John, we're going to have a giant circle of fire. We're going to talk about the Undertaker's character there. John went and created it. I think a lot of the guys, and this is just my personal opinion, don't spend enough time thinking about who their character is. They don't create it. MVP created his character. Someone will help write a promo and give him ideas and stuff, but it's the system. Vince likes to know everything someone's going to say, but if a guy walks in and has this amazing promo to give Vince and he likes it, he's going to let the guy do it. He's not just, you know what I mean? If he doesn't like it, he's going to give what he wants. That's the kind of editor Vince is. John Cena wrote all of those raps. Everything that everyone liked in 2002, 2003 is on John Cena. I simply helped him produce it. I'm not a great quote-unquote promo writer, but I like to find what's inside of a character. Like Roderick Strong, he is pissed off. Every Ring of Honor champion that has ever won the title has been a friggin' party. You know what I mean? Gets lifted on the shoulders. And here comes Homicide, who ruins his moment. How do you feel about that, Roddy? How does that make you feel? And he just says it. You know what I mean? Like, that's from him. And I think it's on the guys. You know what I mean? If guys spend more time trying to get laid and less time trying to think about what their character would say in situations, you know what I mean? Or thinking about how I can be presented. Every character is a brand. You're Coca-Cola. You're Pepsi. You're Belkin. You're the Philadelphia Eagles. How do you best present your message? When I came up with this site, it's a very simple idea, isn't it? I want wrestling. Everyone can understand what the site is about. It's simply, what is your brand? I'm very big into branding, obviously. What is your brand and how do you portray it? And if you're a professional wrestler and you don't think about what you want people to spend money on for you, then you're not doing your job. If you're expecting someone else to do it for you, you're not doing your part of the heavy lifting.
we would love to keep going and going and going with David, but unfortunately he does have a life outside of what we're doing with him.
I got ice cream to get, damn it. You guys promised me ice cream, and I have yet to see any ice cream.
Exactly. I know, we're working on that right now. We're working
punching
on a deal
cake.
With Baskin-Robbins, yes.
I was
the
told site is punching cake.
Yes, the site is iwantwrestling.com. If you are attending the live event in Chicago Ridge, there is a special meet and greet autograph session with Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas from 6:30 to 7:30. Tickets can be purchased through rohwrestling.com, tickets.com, or by calling 215-781-2500. Don't forget, as David said, the live event begins on gofightlive.tv at 8:30. We'll definitely be tuning in here. Stay with us for a second, David. Coming up after the break, we will get into all the fun and excitement that is going to be a wedding. That'll air on March 3rd. Online World of Wrestling Radio will be back with TNA Chat. Stay with us.
Looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
There are plenty of wrestling radio shows that consider themselves to be award-winning, yet they are full of flaws. While WrestleTalk Radio continues to bring you the best wrestling talk on the internet today, with no production flaws. Tune in Sunday nights for WrestleTalk Radio, the best value in wrestling radio. We're just saying.
Wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling columns today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today,
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Candice LaSalle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Bret the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Wonder Man.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
We'll be right back.
This is the Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks. Tune in every Saturday, midnight-ish, for CB Radio, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
He'll eventually chime in and say, Mr. Crowley. Thank you so much to Dave Logano of I Want Wrestling for joining us here. Don't forget the ROH pay-per-view. Watch it before you watch UFC, which we'll talk in a little while. We'll let Spug and Mace preview UFC 6,445. Online World of Wrestling Radio is back here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
127, sir. I don't appreciate your tone. I know you don't get the product and you don't like it, but you don't need to bash it.
I'm not. It's just weird to hear a show announced that way. UFC 127. It's like, I know we do that with Mania, and that's the only show that we seem to do it with.
I was about to say, it's no different to Mania doing WrestleMania, what are we at? 27.
It feels like a horror movie. You know, Saw 35. This time we really end it. And they're like, no, you're not. Bad news, kids. Jeff Hardy is still your TNA World Champion. We were forced to have Jeff Hardy face the Captain 420 himself, Rob Van Dam, in the main event of our TNA Impact this past week. And Eric Bischoff saying, you know, to Mr. Anderson, you know, you want in this match. You should be in it. You want a shot. Fine. You're the referee. It's like, okay. And what better way for a referee to end the match than by checking both two people in this match? To Mays, the whole idea of Hardy even having the belt once again, we now figured out that Anderson was a token holder to see if court was going to come into play here. But if you're reading the tea leaves, Victory Road is March 13th, Lockdown is April 17th. Do we see this as another long-term run? Do you see him getting past Lockdown, let alone Victory Road? Because we don't even know who his opponent is at Victory Road. There's some rumblings going on from the tapings that it may be a certain someone. But how long do you see this run for him? Is it until we go to court again?
At least until they get to the panic point once again where it's, oh no, he might actually be going to court this time. Quick, take the belt off him for a while. It's a real shame, too, because, you know, here it is. I'm anyone who listens to this program and WTR regularly know I'm not the biggest fan of Anderson, yet I was actually enjoying his run as heavyweight champion.
Well, before I go to Spug, let me follow up there real quick. If it's a situation by Lockdown, we'll do Victory Road and we'll do Lockdown. If the court system shows up again and rears its head, and you got to get it off of him by Victory Road or Lockdown, do you go back to Anderson, or is there someone else in this locker room that you can look at and go, yeah, that's my champion? Do you, because the Jarrett Angle thing, which we'll get into, and all the fun recipes that I'm sure the Jarretts are passing around, do you wrap up Angle real fast to get him back in this thing, or is there someone else that we're not seeing?
God, I'd have no clue, because at the moment, the only guys you can really put into the main event that aren't already wrapped up into something are you guys like Angle, Anderson, and probably RVD, if you actually want to let him on TV for more than once every 6 months. But it all comes down to who's available, and to be honest, a lot of the faces are already wrapped up in, well, at least the faces I like to see in a main event, already wrapped up in this now feud between Immortal and Fortune. Because I'd love to see AJ Styles take on Jeff Hardy and whoop his ass.
To Spug, do you see someone stepping up between now and Victory Order Lockdown as the chosen one that's Jeff Jarrett like to chime back in the day? Or are you fine with Hardy having this belt again and let's see if he can keep his head out of the clouds and stop him from writing more song lyrics?
Why did you take the belt off of Anderson? Why?
I'm still trying to figure that one out, too.
He was a credible. The whole word here with your champion is credible. Does any one of us who watches this product, whether we want to or not, feel that Jeff Hardy is a credible champion? I'm asking legitimately. I'm not making a talking point. I'm asking legitimately. Because I certainly don't.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out. Wrestling Fanatic in our room says TNA needs to build their brand, and this is the best way to have Fortune hold the major championship. And it said that they need to keep the strap on Hardy until AJ is ready to take it back again. So it is an interesting setup. As you said, I'm in agreement with a lot of folks. I didn't see a need to take the belt off of Anderson. I was enjoying, as many say, I was enjoying Anderson having the belt when they actually let him defend the damn thing.
Right.
Other than putting him in tag matches and burying him. I was hoping that this was more than just a transitional phase.
But what they didn't transition it to anybody.
That's the problem. He was a token, like I said, that's why I'm more calling him a token holder. He was basically standing there with the belt on the bus stop corner going, all right, the Hardy bus is coming soon. Where the heck? Oh, there you are, Jeff. You're not in prison scrubs. Here, you get this back. Sucked.
He wasn't a transitional champion. They didn't transition to anybody. They gave it back to the guy they took it off of. And I don't understand why. You know, Anderson is a credible champion. A credible champion. And you have this whole Fortune, main event mafia, NWO, you know, whatever the hell you want to call it, these angles going on, and lost in the shuffle is any semblance of a solid, you know, direction you're taking these storylines. We talked about it last week with the Angle Jarrett storyline with Graham and your black friend. I can't remember his name, who I thought
Kevin
was white.
Kevin Scott.
Him. I forgot his name for a minute.
He's probably listening and going like, I'm dialing the number.
His name's not Jamal. I can't remember it. He's got a white guy name.
God.
And I mean it with all love, Kevin. I mean, you can call me a cracker all you want. That's
yeah, we love
fine.
Kevin
I am.
On this network.
I do. I love Kevin. But, you know, the thing is there's no, like, solid direction that they're taking these storylines. The whole thing with Anderson now seems like a knee-jerk reaction. Like everybody's
He's in the room. He's in the chat room.
Call in!
Call in, dude. 267-297-1397. Dial in.
Call in!
Would love to have you on.
Did he make a crack about me or something?
He's in the chat room and all of a sudden he starts laughing. He says, yes, this is Kevin. Love you guys. Yeah, but, I mean, well, let me jump in here real quick. This situation with Anderson and Hardy, and I know it's TNA chat time, but it harkens back to New Year's Revolution, I think it was 06, when Cena dropped to Edge, and then they passed the belt back and forth for a while there. Is it different than what they're doing here?
Yes.
I mean, people did want to see Edge as champ.
Yes.
People want to see – okay, go ahead.
It's different because the Anderson thing was a knee-jerk reaction to Jeff Hardy not, you know, may or may not be going to jail. That's the difference. The thing with Edge is, if you noticed, one of the better feuds of that year came out of that pay-per-view. The Edge-Cena feud out of 06 and the heel turn of Edge and building him up as the ultimate opportunist, you know, putting that together, they did a really good job with that. Out of that pay-per-view. So, there's a big difference between Edge and Cena in 06 and Anderson Hardy now. But I'll throw it to Mace, because I'm sure I interrupted him somehow.
No, you didn't interrupt me, but however, I did sort of think of a small point there. Are we suddenly entering the knee-jerk reaction stage of wrestling? It just seems like yeah, the panic button, the big red button that you're not supposed to hit is being hit quite often. I'm quite sure they're going to break the damn thing if they keep going.
Yeah, I'm about to hit the panic button right now because he is here. Jamal Scott, I mean Kevin Scott is here. he was listening in from New York, and he's like, "I'm calling in." So just remember, we're PG when you throw your racial epitaphs at the spug.
Fair enough. How are you guys doing?
What's up, man?
Yeah, when you watch this, I was talking to Kevin Thursday night, and he tapped out during the whole Jarrett's love affair, going to the restaurant, and all that situation. Did you end up watching the end of this thing, or did you go into a self-induced coma and haven't come out yet, TNA-wise?
I have not watched the rest of it. I tried a couple of times. I got through maybe the first 5 minutes, and just, it's,
you too,
it's
huh?
Horrible. I give up.
I got as far as the intro to the main event on Impact this week.
Yeah, I made it all the way through. Yeah, let me run the show for fans real quick that did not watch it. We did have the arrival of Ric Flair in the Impact Zone and eventually found out that he was against the idea of Fortune being separated, and it looks like we're going to have AJ Styles versus Ric Flair this Thursday night, yay or boo, however you want. We had Hernandez defeat Douglas Williams, and for no apparent reason whatsoever, the beautiful people, Sarita and Rosita, brawl to the floor. Don't know why. Apparently one of the highest rated segments of the show, according to Nielsen, was the Pope, D'Angelo, De Niro, and a pig in the ring. And no, I'm not talking about derogatory comments of Samoa Joe. I'm talking an actual roasted pig in the ring, which led to Samoa Joe and Okada, Kato, whatever he's calling him, coming out. We did have Frigate Fujiki Zarian, the World X Division Champion, defeat Rai E via DQ and had the surprise of one of our favorites here, original knockout Tracy Brooks. As mentioned, Matt Hardy and AJ Styles did have a match where Ric Flair turned on Fortune. We did have Sarita and Rosita defeat the beautiful people. Velvet Sky is looking like she's heading to the Funny Farm, calling out Sarita, calling out Winter, calling out anyone with a one-word name on this product. Apparently we're going to have this Thursday a pose down between Rob Terry and Scott Steiner. And of course we had the wonderful dinner plans of the Jarretts interrupted. So yes, unlike everybody else, I made it all the way through to the end. Don't know how I did it, but I did it. I get a little Barry Horowitz pat on my shoulder. Since Kevin is here, let me just bounce this out here real quick. Some folks have noticed that Kazuchika Okada, who is of New Japan Pro Wrestling, if you're wondering, where'd they get that guy? Well, that's where they got him. His new character was inspired, obviously, from the Green Hornet movie and television series. Well, the word around the locker room is Samoa Joe was the person who actually went to creative and said, I'd like him to be my Alex Shelley paparazzi camera back in the day situation. So, the ratings seem to be not going down, Kevin and Mason Spud, but they're not going up. I mean, anything come out of this TV that you're like, I like that? Or is everything sitting there going, like David said, we're being negative people and we can't go and hang out with David and have ice cream?
I don't know if it's so much just, because I can say for myself, I'm not being negative to be negative. I'm negative because I'm turned off by the product. I love wrestling. I write about it. If I didn't love wrestling, I wouldn't be on the phone with you right now. I wouldn't care what's going on. I think for me personally, I cannot stand turning on a show that I want to watch. I do want to watch Impact, and I sit there whether I fall asleep or, you know, I turn the channel halfway through. All I want to do is be entertained. You know, before you guys talking about if Jeff Hardy is a credible champion, I just take it a step further. Is the product entertaining? Is there a reason why anyone should watch, which I feel is crap, that comes out on Thursday night? Who's that target audience that wants to care, wants to watch the Jarretts going dinner, the whole setup for the Angle feud? It's not entertaining, and not even about whether it's tasteful or not. It just, who cares?
Yeah, we just got this from Sir Rock, and thanks to the Nielsen Media Research folks for this one. TNA's Impact drew a 1.13, which was down from the 1.2 of the show a week before. The show did average 1.5 million. This show did have a couple strong weeks, back-to-back weeks, January 27th and February 3rd, where they were 1.3, which leads to this coming Thursday, where they
Matt Hardy was on Impact and the ratings went down. His ego must be crushed.
I'm sure cold-blooded or cold-brewed or whatever Matt Hardy will.
Cold crappy for what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean,
frost-brewed Matt Hardy? Is Coors Light now?
I'm not sure. Let me ask this before I go to the rating thing here and to the and the next couple things. I'll pass it around the room here. Is this what TNA expected when they got Matt Hardy? Were they expecting a reuniting of the Hardys as a tag team? I mean, I know it's hard to sit there in the first few weeks and go, it's a failure, it's a success, it's meh, which may sell pinbar t-shirts from Wild Talk Radio in a few minutes. But coming out of the gate so far to Kevin and then the Spug and the Mace, Matt Hardy, is he worth the investment that they're making in him with this whole cold blood character? Do you think this will get over with the audience, or is he treading water until Jeff drops the belt and, so you want to do the tag team, dude?
Well, I'm sure the idea of getting the Hardy Boys back together was probably the only reason why they put the money out there for him. But in terms of will it get over the crowd, who knows? Stranger things have happened. I think there's a guy who's been playing a living dead zombie who works as a gravedigger. He had a nice, successful career. He just came back. Things, you know, the whole throw something against the wall, see what sticks. I don't think this exactly will be the thing that makes Matt Hardy the next big thing, but hey, who knows what could happen.
Wait. Was that just a dig at The Undertaker?
No, not a dig, but let's be honest. The character on paper, if that character didn't exist and someone's trying to create that today, I think it would be more than reasonable for a lot of people to laugh at the idea. If it was just created today out of nowhere, the whole persona, it is a little out there when you really think about what the character is, but it worked perfect for its time, and over the course of time, he's built into a true legend. So I think.
But it's the presence.
That's exactly what I'm saying, though. But it works for Mark Calloway. It works for him. It's worked for the past couple of decades. But if they try to do something completely out of left field today with that never having been a character in the history of WWE, it probably would make some people laugh.
I mean, think about Triple H for a second. The game, the cerebral assassin. That character doesn't work if it's anybody else.
Exactly.
And I didn't understand where you were going. I thought it was a dig, so I apologize.
Oh, no, not at all.
Wait.
Oh, he's got a big shovel he can use later on. Well, let me ask this to Mace. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But your question was about reuniting the Hardy Boys, right?
Yeah, could it happen? Do you think that's the end game here, that we're going to see the Hardys go after Beer Money at some point if Beer Money's got the belts?
Probably. I agree with Kevin / Jamal here on that.
Hey, leave Ray alone.
That was probably the thought process when they signed Matt, was that eventually they were going to put the tag team back together. What is unfortunate, however, is that those two are not in the shape that they were in even 10 years ago at WrestleMania 17 when they had that tremendous ladder match at WrestleMania. They are not the tag team or wrestlers that they once were, and I don't understand, other than the nostalgia factor, for doing it at this time, why you would reunite them. Because if you do, you're probably going to get the same crappy tag team that you're getting out of the individuals now as individual wrestlers. They're just going to be crappier combined.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there, Spug, you know, especially with Matt looking like he's got carrying enough weight that would have easily have been distributed between both of them when they first broke into the WWE. But I guess that they were going for the idea of, oh my god, here's the chance to reunite the Hardy Boys and let them go forth and do whatever. Hell, if that would have worked, they would have got Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Huss in and reunite the world's greatest tag team and have them, you know, put on some fabulous matches with the Motor City Machine Guns and Beer Money. But I don't know, I think the fact that Jeff has been a single star for too long is going to hurt the idea of bringing the Hardys back together. But then again, Hardy Marks will believe or do anything, so.
Yeah, I mean, at least we're not seeing Amy Dumas walk in the door. Is that the next step here? Because we've heard that go around. I know Omega would probably find the nearest noose and take himself out if that happens.
As long as they fumigate the building afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, there's names that are still going around. You still got a Gregory Helms, Shane Helms, although he's off doing the Lucha Libre USA tapings, which hopefully will be airing back on MTV2 very soon because we really enjoyed that product. If they had been in good shape, would that be a match fans of TNA would want to see, the Hardys versus Beer Money or the Hardys versus the Guns being as, or Gen Me, since look at the Gen Me outfits, it's like looking in the Time Warp mirror there. You would have liked to have seen Gen Me versus the Hardys somewhere down the road, or Gen Me versus or Hardy's Guns.
If we're talking about the Hardys of yesteryear, yes. If they were even able to put on something close to what they used to be able to do, that would be an interesting match. And yes, it's definitely based on nostalgia, but then again, pretty much that's what TNA has come to stand for. We already got, you know, guys from when I was 3 or 4 years old running around. I would love to definitely see something new and original, but yeah, there's always going to be that appeal of obviously the people you grew up with, how they compare to the people of today. And if the Hardys could go, that would be a great match, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
And that's a shame. Unfortunately, it looks like this Thursday, as mentioned, there will be, I'm sure the ratings are going to go through the effing roof here, with a poos down between Rob Terry and Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner. Doesn't this scream of Dino Bravo back in the day, or Jesse Ventura helping him with the weights and everything? I mean, is there interest, Mace, in this? I mean, do you want to see it at Victory Road or even Lockdown, Rob Terry versus Scott Steiner?
The match, yes. Pose down, no, because I'm sorry, but when it came down to the whole pose down, quote-unquote, match gimmick, you couldn't go any better than anybody up against Ravishing Rick Rude.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that. Oh, yeah.
Well, you remember a few years ago they had the pose down between Triple H and wasn't that Triple H and Scott Steiner in WWE they did that at?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what the hell? What's next? We're going to have a dead girl in a coffin on TNA?
No, we already had a coffin on TNA, as the fans chanted, Fire Russo. If you don't remember, go back and look up Sting versus Abyss, and you'll hear Reigns of Fire Russo coming through. As said, Victory Road is a few weeks away, March 13th. I believe we're at some point going to see a triple threat match involving Anderson and RVD and Hardy or someone else in that formula. Any interest in seeing, are we going to have this situation like WWE did for a while there where Randy Orton was in multiple pay-per-view main events? Are we going to see that again where we're going to get a Hardy Anderson type situation? Or, as you said, you'd like to see someone like AJ step up, or if we could get the wanted posters out there once again, please. Desmond Wolfe's family really misses him. His fans miss him. I loved him. Nigel McGuinness, if you're out there, come home, please. What the heck was that?
Rock playing with his porno again. But do we really? Who the hell got in, you know, creative Dixie Carter, whoever's ear, and said, make sure you put Jeff Hardy on because he's the only guy who draws. Okay.
Yeah, as Kevin Nash once said, you guys are calling yourselves rock stars, but you're not even putting 1,000 seats in a building, and we're gonna have 67,000 April 3rd when we get to WrestleMania. And are they putting too much stock in this return of Hulk Hogan on March 3rd? That, you know, we'll go back to for fans of the WCW days, you know. Hogan used to pull this crap during the NBA playoffs when TNT and TBS were the only place in town you could find the NBA playoffs. Hogan would disappear on purpose and go, see, look, ratings went to the toilet, I left, and then come back after basketball and go, look, I came back, the ratings are up. I mean, is there a fan clamoring, Kevin, or your friends clamoring, going, brother, March 3rd, Hogan's back, yay!
I can say for myself, I am a huge Hulkamaniac. I've met the guy twice. I think the first time probably was the moment of my life in terms of meeting my childhood hero. I have absolutely no interest whatsoever of seeing him on my TV screen again. There is no appeal, unfortunately. What's happened since he's been back with TNA, I'm not sure who to blame. I'm sure the blame, you know, goes around for everybody. They have done nothing compelling to make me care. And at the worst part, it's now at the point where, physically, I know he can't do certain things, and he'll probably wind up in a wheelchair. And quite frankly, I don't want to see him continuing anything that's going to get into that wheelchair any sooner than necessary.
I mean, Mace, we already have Ric Flair putting off shoulder surgery, so I mean, I'll pose the question to you. Is TNA hoping that the ratings will spike, no pun intended, with the return of the Immortal Bald Spot, or is it whatever matches they have that they're taping in Fayetteville this Thursday?
I think they're probably trying to put their eggs in the basket of the Immortal Bald Spot actually drawing some ratings. But as you said, you know, he pulled this type of stuff before. He'd disappear, ratings go down. He comes back, they spike up suddenly, and he takes the credit. I'm sorry, but as much as Hulk Hogan means a lot to this business, I think TNA need to sit there and go, okay, we might need to get your contract and tear it up and put it in a paper shredder.
We want our money back. To Spug, this event that's going to air on March 3rd is especially the return of Hogan, this resolving of the court issue with him and Dixie Carter and the wedding, which it was the last time we had a wedding on TV. Was it Sanjay and Jay and Val? And you go back to the Billy and Chuck fun with a certain guy who's in charge right now in TNA on TV as a reverend. I mean, is this just like heading to cluster land on a
wait, Rico's
train?
In TNA?
No, Bischoff was the one that was the minister in that wedding.
I thought Rico was overseeing that.
Rico was involved
Bischoff
too.
With some Bischoff really, really minister. Good facial makeup.
Yeah.
Was that really Bischoff?
Yeah, it was Bischoff. He pulled himself off.
I never knew that was Bischoff. I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm
set
not
up
lying.
3 minute. Yeah, it set up 3 minute warning coming back and getting involved.
Yeah, I never knew that was Bischoff. I'm not even. Wow, I'm impressed. You know, you said it about the NBA playoffs. You know, back in the day when that was, you know, you went to TNT and TBS to watch basketball playoffs because they were the only network that had them. The thing with Hogan is there's going to be a rating spike because it's the name of Hogan and people will tune in to see him. The unfortunate thing, however, is you have to look at the ratings afterward. You have to look at the ratings for the week after Hogan and the week after that, because if they don't continue to go up or get any better, what really does the rating spike tell you other than a lot of people tuned in to see Hogan?
I mean, it's the name. It's like you said, people tuned in last night to Raw because of that name, The Undertaker. It's got that thing. And so many decades later, as much as some of us don't like to say it, there's that fan out there that sitting there going, Hogan's back, cool, we're going. He can barely walk to the ring, but we're going. You know, Hardy's there. I'm a fan of the Hardys back in the day. Cool, they're going to be there. I'm going. We talked about it with Dave Lagana that this is a company, and Kevin and Mays can attest to it from watching as religiously as I do. Spud may or may not can attest to it. But it seems like if you work for WWE, even for a cup of coffee or got coffee, you're automatically in and you're pushed into a main event situation. Oh, I mean, is there interest in possibly seeing a Hardy turn and that you have a Matt and Jeff feud all over again? Or is that finally done that you won't see the next former WWE star come in and immediately he's number one contender?
That's kind of harsh. Obviously, whatever happens in terms of the next person coming in, they're going to be the main focus of the storyline, simply because they have the name recognition, you have the name value. People, as much as we might, you know, make fun of Matt Hardy, people do know the name Matt Hardy. He does have a following, whether they're crazy or just teenage girls, who knows. But he does have a following, does have something to bring to the table. Apparently not that much to the table. But they love that idea because you can obviously, you bring somebody in, you have a built-in audience for that person, hopefully, and then you have built-in feuds based upon the past, which does work if you do it the right way. Like with the whole big March 3rd show, if they really want to take advantage of having Hogan back, you put something on that makes the show worthwhile to watch. You hit a home run, you do whatever you have to do to make sure that by the end of that night, while people might have tuned in to see Hulk Hogan, they're talking about whatever happened in the final 5 minutes, whatever great angle you're going to run, and that will hopefully bring them to the next week. Like with Undertaker last night, yeah, people tuned in to see Undertaker, but when Triple H came out, that made the show. Then they need to do something like that with Hardys. They need to do something like that with, if they're going to continue with Anderson and Angle, whatever direction they go, use them to bring the viewers in and then give them something new.
Wrestle Fanatic chimes in our chat room. I have no issue with TNA pushing former WWE talent, but the issue is, and always has been, using those former names to create their own, which, you know, at certain points, that's going to happen, but you got to look back. There's not a lot of originals still here, and you've still got, beer, as AJ said in his promo, Beer Money, Kaz, Tracy Brooks, AJ, Amazing Red, Daniels on and off. There's not that many people. Eric Young, sorry, I forgot Eric there, that you can go back to when they debuted on Spike TV in 05, let alone the first pay-per-view back in 04. There's not that many TNA originals still around. To Mason Spud, I mean, this whole idea of TNA originals, and it's weird to hear somebody say, oh, well, AJ Styles needs to prove himself. And I'm like, what do you mean AJ needs to prove himself? The dude has been in this company since day one. Why? Because he hasn't worked for WWE or he never worked for WCW. He has to prove himself?
Well, two quick things before the main answer. One, don't worry about forgetting Eric Young, TNA Creative, do it just as much as you do, especially the fact that he still has the original TNA heavyweight title.
Hey, he's a champ, brother. I'm proud of him.
Two, AJ Styles did actually wrestle in WCW. A bit shortly.
Air Paris.
In 2000. Yes, Air Paris. But to have guys like AJ Styles have to prove themselves is a load of crap. These guys have been carrying the company on their shoulders since practically day one. So they should be the guys that are in the main event right now. They should have been in the main event 2-3 years ago. But for some reason, they don't want to put them there. I have no idea why.
So someone like Samoa Joe, Spug, is sitting there, but he's been sitting mid-card for the longest while. You know, there's nothing against Puff D'Angelo De Niro, Elijah Burke, but Samoa Joe should be taking on Jeff Hardy, should be taking on better stuff than that. And Pope should be doing that too. So, I mean, is it just, you know, a mentality of, you're former WWE, cool, you're safe, your name, we're going to push you, the guys have been here, you're great, wait your turn. But I've been waiting for a year. Oh, don't worry, your term is coming. I mean, is that a situation that's going on here, Spug? Is that? I know I'm asking you to make chicken salad out of chicken bleep, but that well, is what it is with this company.
Well, the unfortunate thing is you have guys like Desmond Wolfe, Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle, Elijah Burke. We can go on and on and on and on and on and on and on with the names because they're there. What the unfortunate part about all of that is that you have this company who seems to be obsessed with the names like Kevin Nash and the like, who only want to push them, and it's almost like their own guys are there to push the guys that they bring in from other companies without building their own stars. Can you follow me with that? I know it was kind of an effed answer, and I apologize.
Well, I can follow it because I was at the Impact Zone when they brought in Christian Cage, Captain Charisma, the Instant Classic, and he laid over all the TNA stars. Like when we had Chris Harris on, he talked about he enjoyed working with Christian Cage, but he was a stepping stone to get pushed right into the main event, eventually the NWA World title.
Well, see, here's the thing. I like the fact that they brought in Christian. I thought when they brought in Christian, that was a smart move because WWE had misused him. They didn't put him in, you know what I mean? They weren't giving him the proper push. And I thought the way that TNA brought him in, it was exquisitely done. You know, I mean, it was the right move for that company, and he could have been a legend in that company. What is unfortunate is every smart booking decision that TNA has made with one of their own talent is followed up immediately by six or seven other dumb ones with the same exact talent. Take Father James Mitchell, for example, right? Putting him with Abyss so that you could continue that monster image and gimmick with Abyss without having him speak, because we've all heard Chris Justice speak and heard him on the mic. He's horrible. You know, and that's not a slight or an aside against Chris Justice. That's just simple fact. Some guys are good on the mic, others are bad. And you know, to have James Mitchell there to talk for him was fantastic. Then all of a sudden, James Mitchell's gone, and next thing we know, you know, when Hogan shows up, Abyss is wearing yellow and red and talking on the microphone, and, you know, it ruined the gimmick. It ruined everything that Abyss had built up. It was just like taking off the mask off of Kane.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with it. And Kevin can – is that Mace? Kevin and I, we're loyalists. We've watched the product from day one. There's been so many run-ups with characters, like, you know, Lance Hoyt comes to mind of their – you know, the dude spoke for himself. Big six-foot-whatever monster, put him out there. This was great. At one point, they had Ricky Banderas come in as Judas Macias. I mean, there's been so many starts and starts with this organization.
Wasn't Judas Mencius the dude that came in with Tito Ortiz when Tito Ortiz came back to the company?
I think he was brought in by Mitchell, if I'm not mistaken.
I want to say he came through the ring and grabbed Abyss and pulled him down from that's what happened, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's been so many starts and starts.
He was the big Mexican guy.
Yeah, he worked for Wrestling Society X for a while. I think he was in a mix with Vampiro back in the day.
Just not used to seeing Mexicans that big.
It's that drinking water, man. You get that proper water in your system, and next thing you know, it's, I come to kill the gringo.
You know, the thing is Kevin has got to get off the phone with us and be like, I am never talking to those racist people. He's got to get on the phone. I mean, I'm calling him Jam. I'm telling him he's not memorable because his name's not Jamal. And I talk about never seeing a Mexican that big before. And he's got to get off the phone and be like, screw them.
Yeah, we're equal opportunity offenders here, I guess, on the network. We're going to let Kevin go because we have to wrap the show up. So thanks for calling in, Kevin. We appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure. Have a good night.
Yep, don't forget, under the ring. Under the ring is where Kevin can be seen on PoughkeepsieJournal.com. Want to let you know, yes, next week, this network, 9 o'clock, before Jerry the King Lawler comes on during the 10 o'clock hour, we will have the ASW Florida Tag Team Champions, who may possibly be the NWA World Tag Team Champions by that point, Eddie Torres, Eric Cooper, the Uprising are taking on the Dark City Fight Club, which is John Davis and Corey Chavis, this Friday at SW Full Throttle. So they will be coming on to talk about their match with TNA star Jay Lethal and the Emerald Emperor Simon Says for next Saturday night's big event at the National Guard Armory in Orlando for ASW Best of the Best. You can log on to ASWFlorida.com for that one. And as I said, it is locked. I have spoken to the man. I nearly fell down on the ground. Play it.
Talk over it. This is your fight music.
The man. The legend. He's been in the ring with everyone you could ever think of in your career. Flair, done it. Hogan, done it. Savage, done it. Austin Idol, done it. Jackie Fargo. Andy Kaufman. And most recently, The Miz. The one and
Michael
only.
Michael Cole, we hope.
Oh, WrestleMania, baby. We will ask him. No question will be off limits because on March 2nd, for the first time ever, I was stunned when Jerry Lawler told me this, for the first time ever at CCW Coliseum Championship Wrestling in Evansville, Indiana, the Legends of Wrestling event, for the first time in the history of his feud with superstar Bill Dundee, the kids are getting involved. That's right. Jerry the King Lawler and Brian Christopher will take on Jamie Dundee and superstar Bill Dundee. So go find Coliseum Championship Wrestling on Facebook for all the information about that event. You can find the Evansville Memorial Coliseum online. If that's not enough, I feel like Don West pimping shirts right now, which Mace will pimp in a couple minutes here. The week after that, a man who possibly will be going into the WWE Hall of Fame, if you believe the rumors that are going around the campfire, the one and only Road Warrior Animal, Joe Laurinaitis. Oh, I wish Mike Hegstrand was around to be a part of that interview. I may reach out and say, could we get Precious Paul on this one as well? He has a brand new book coming out about his life and career in the Road Warriors. I know Spug's excited as a fan of Ohio State because Road Warrior Animal's son, James, was a superstar at Ohio State, now with the St. Louis Rams. So he will be here. I'm going to go ahead and announce it. I'm not going to announce who's going to be on. But on our March 22nd show, we will be doing a night where we will talk nothing but World Championship Wrestling. Because on March 26th, it will be a sad day in wrestling as we will celebrate the 10th anniversary of the passing of World Championship Wrestling. We already have two guests locked in for that show. I'm not going to tell you who they are yet, but let your imagination run wild. Both of them work for WCW. One of them was there for a long time as a professional wrestler. The other worked on the microphone side of stuff. So March 22nd will be that event.
Alan. So we're talking.
WCW
on March.
Yes.
On March 22nd. That's what we're talking about.
Yes, where the big boys played.
Okay, just making sure.
Yes, that'll be definitely the thing. So if you're a fan of World Championship Wrestling and you had Nitro parties that they like to talk about, or you remember the night where Kiss nearly killed the promotion, or the night that Goldberg won the title from Hulk Hogan in the George Dome, which is amazing that WrestleMania is going to be there.
If you survive the road reports with Stagger Lee Marshall.
Oh, yeah, or Chris Cruz or anyone else that was involved there. And remember the abortion that was Mark Madden on the microphone. Or the Oklahoma. We could go on and on and on. Believe me, we'll go through everything from WCW, the Mid-Atlantic time when they were that, when it was run by the Crockett's. We'll address everything on March 22nd. I'm not the only person that's on this great network, Wild Talk Radio Network. Spug and Mace are the real MVPs of this network,
hey,
along with Sprocket.
There we go.
They are the MVPs of this network because after they're done here, these two and the Omega partake in Otaku Talk Live. For fans that are brand new to this and maybe have downloaded this show for the first time from iTunes or from Click Wrestle, explain the concept of Otaku Talk Live. Either one of you go.
Well, pretty much
go.
The same.
Doc!
Well, I got other shit to pimp. You pimp this.
What am I pimping? The fact that we talk about movies and then we can't get to topics that we've set out for weeks? Yeah, some revamping of that show. We're supposed to be geeky, and we kind of are. Last week we talked about arcades for 2 hours. I've got next.
Yep, pretty much. You've got next, 9 p.m. Eastern, Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights. Tune in. It's Geek Talk, done right. Or so they think.
Yeah, and will you cats be doing your live talk during UFC 127 this Saturday?
Yes, and we're finally going to talk about the fact that Brock Lesnar's a trainer or a coach on this season of The Ultimate Fighter, because it's getting close to the debut, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the heavyweights. Because they're fighting in May? May or June? Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos are fighting, so... This is another thing I wanted to ask David Lugano that I forgot about. I wanted to ask him about Lesnar.
Hmm.
Oh, well, definitely. He is definitely on our list that we want him back, because he was phenomenal.
Send him a tweet on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, definitely go to him. It's LAGANA, or you can also actually Twitter I Want Wrestling, all one word. That's his setup.
Yes, and so tune in from Tapouts and Knockouts and live coverage Saturday night, beginning 9, 10, something like that. Tune in, MileTalkRadio.com, and after they're done talking MMA, we'll be talking the most random, completely weird and wacky, known as CB Radio, midnight-ish. On WildTalkRadio.com. This past week, we, talked about the politics. We talked politics. We talked weird.
Wait, you guys talked politics?
Yeah, we kind of a little bit.
Subway about what?
Some brought it up. I don't know.
Which one of you actually has a political opinion that is worth anything?
Subway.
All right, well, then I'm going to have to go talk to Subway.
Yes, so check out the archive. We talked about the worst jobs in the world as well. And other fun stuff. Plus, we found out the princess that Mace is on a Facebook quiz. So, tune in. CB Radio. You never know what will happen. Midnight-ish on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Coming back soon. Podcast version will be Life is Callous. Coming very, very soon. And then Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. It's the show known around the world as the Iconic Wrestle Talk Radio. Join Spug, Mace, Omega, and that guy named Tim Stein to talk all things pro wrestling.
Is there a pay-per-view this week?
No.
No, the Oscars are this Sunday.
So it will be an Oscar award-winning edition of Wrestle Talk Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern. Tune in. You'll like it.
So we're going to have, you know, great debate questions related to the Oscars and movies.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what's going to happen.
I have no idea. I just found out the Oscars are this Sunday. We'll see what we're doing.
Go Social Network. I know it ain't going to happen.
Mace, go. Shill
yes.
your stuff.
One small thing. Those of us down here in Australia will know that coming up on the 6th of March is the World's Greatest Shave charity event for cancer. One of a good friend, wrestling, close to wrestling legend here in Australia, Ricky Diamond, is putting on a small sort of entertain the kids type thing at Barrack Mazda in Narre Warren. People, if you live in Victoria or Australia, look it up your bloody selves. I'm actually going to be stepping back into the ring for the first time in over a year. just for this event, because, hey, it's for charity, man. You know, everybody loves to help out for charity. Yeah, so, March 6th, Beric Mazda in Narre Warren. Come see me wrestle or just say hello.
Yeah, we mentioned t-shirts a little while ago.
Meh.
Do you wanna pimp the shirts?
Meh.
It is official. The official meh t-shirt and an Otaku Talk Live t-shirt have now been designed and are now available to be bought from cbradio.ewazone.com. Go there, order shirts, support the network.
Woohoo!
Make us some money.
Woohoo!
Excellent. Thanks to David Lagana for being with us. Thanks to Spug, Mace, Kevin Scott for calling in. Thanks to his brother Jamal, his friend Ray Ray, and Pookie, and any other racial name that you want to use, because, hey, everybody's a little bit racist sometimes.
I like him a lot. I hope he understands it's all in good fun.
I don't know. If any bombs come flying from that New York, you'll know. Thanks, Jason Deadridge, Brad Dykens, the big bosses, Tim Sines. As mentioned, Jerry Lawler next week, Bird Warrior Animal the week after. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell the corpses in the neighborhood near you. This is the place to be every Tuesday night. I don't care if you're on 24/7, 365. I'm better than you, and I know it. Ozzy Osbourne is better than you, and amazingly, he did a sentimental song back in the day with the Queen of Metal, Lita Ford. This is Close My Eyes Forever. Have a good night. If I close my eyes.